is the Grahamian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grahamian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the Hollow Earth, live from the Grahamian Bunker, it is the Grahamian Report, and I'm your happy, humble host, Micah Hanks.
McCoy is right in pointing out the enormous danger potential in any contact with life and intelligence as fantastically advanced as this. But I must point out that the possibilities, the potential for knowledge and advancement is equally great. Risk. Risk is our business. That's what the starship is all about. That's why we're aboard her.
That's right, risk is our business, and welcome to a very special edition of the Grahamian Report, broadcasting live from the Hollow Earth, bringing you beyond the fringes of insight, insanity, and inception of advanced technologies from the future, UFO anti-gravitics, and fear and folk devilry from the four corners of the earth. I am your host with the ghost, the mouth of the south, Mr. Micah Hanks. Joining me in studio, as always, we have a fantastic staff of individuals who make this program what it is on a weekly basis. To my right, producer extraordinaire and my friendly co-host, Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, well, thanks, and welcome to everyone out there. Real quick, I just want to go ahead and clear something up. There's been a lot of misconception going around. I don't hate ducks. I love ducks. I just hate Satan.
I think the aliens are just trying to land right now. I tell you, we've been working too hard. Wait, hold on, I'm forgetting something. Matt Oakley, our engineer, joining the program live via, actually, microphone console number 3. Matt, how you doing?
Hey, man. You know.
You're here.
It's weird, too, because...
Because you're here.
Microphone 3 is, like, right behind you, too.
I know, right?
Hey, how'd that exorcism go last weekend?
The kid's dead, but, you know.
but is the devil walking among us?
That is
I think there's going to be maybe a press conference held by Satan that's going to answer a lot of questions.
Well, now listen, hold on.
By killing the child, did you save the earth even for a moment?
He didn't kill the child.
Well, I didn't do anything.
By whatever you did, the end result being a child is dead, did that stop Satan from walking the earth for at least one more moment?
At least an hour.
Oh, success. God.
You know, what they need to understand, though, is actually, unfortunately, it was one of the Hadal potato children.
Oh, well, then they don't even have souls.
Well, he came back to life. You know, they put him in the ground, and he sprouted anew, and he's doing just fine.
Well, yeah, because they don't have souls.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody knows Hadals don't have souls.
Hadals are gingers.
You know, on my Facebook page this week, people were asking me what Hadals were. Some of our listeners, they wanted to know what Hadals. I know at least one Hadal's a ginger. You hooked up with the supreme Hadal hottie, and you had a bunch of little potato babies.
And you know, I'm even.
And then you said tonight I dine on potato soup.
And see, what's great is because I am both literally and figuratively not shallow, because I'm in the mojo. That I even overlooked the gnarly looking roots growing out of her legs, because wow,
you thought they were varicose veins, and then you got up close.
Let me tell you about au gratin.
Honey, you got something growing out of your. Oh my god.
Have you ever had poutine?
You're killing me over here, man. But listen, Now, all this talk about satanic rituals, I thought, what better to open with than this story about Lady Gaga? Housekeeper outs Lady Gaga's satanic ritual. Folks, we couldn't make this up. This was courtesy of our friends at Who Forted, who, you know, it's funny because I think, you know, the Graylian Report Twitter feed that we moderate, we started following Who Forted this week, and they were like, you know, I think that they immediately turned around and followed us and said something very nice about it. They're fantastic.
Well, that's good because we crowned them the 2011 best blog name ever.
It is. It is the very best blog name that we have awarded to a paranormally themed blog for the last year, and maybe for the next several years. Who Forted, you can't beat that. But the stuff on the website is really good. I mean, the content's great. And anyway, okay, so and just to show that, here's this story about Lady Gaga. Every good star needs a few salacious rumors to solidify their place in the hallowed halls of the best celebrity gossip. After all, you know what they say, there's no such thing as bad press. But with regard to Lady Gaga here, in an article since deleted by The Independent, a housekeeper for London's Intercontinental Hotel reported that the pop singer was, get this, quote, bathing in blood as part of some kind of a satanic ritual, going on to say that she left large amounts of blood in the hotel bathtub. You know what? I have a different theory. I don't know that it was a satanic ritual. I think that Lady Gaga may have actually merely been draining the meat before she wore it to whatever award ceremony that she went to later that night. But that said, the quote goes as follows. Lady Gaga left large amounts of blood in the suite during a stay this summer. The incident was reported to the concierge, who was told to put it out of her mind. Oh my God. While many people maintain that the substance was actually just theatrical blood used during one of Gaga's elaborately staged shows, this doesn't hush the few who are convinced that the singer is actually a mind-controlled murder slave of the Secret World Order, collectively known as the Illuminati, and was probably using the blood of sacrificed virgins to maintain her youth.
Well, let me just cut in there and say, if Lady Gaga is a main player in the Illuminati, then ladies and gentlemen, we have nothing to worry about from the Illuminati.
Yeah, they're going to be easy on the eyes, and there's not going to be much substance behind what they're talking about.
Easy on the eyes? Have you seen Lady Gaga?
Okay, depending on which angle you catch her from.
I mean, come on. Come.
Good or bad? Okay, come Chris. On. Chris, let's bring it back to... Okay, hold on. Seventh grade all over again. Hot or not? Lady Gaga.
It depends.
Come on, it's an easy question. Hot or not? Lady Gaga.
Well, it depends on a lot of factors. What? Sometimes she's incredibly hot. Sometimes she's hideously ugly. There's no middle ground with this woman.
Yeah. I'd agree with that statement.
But Matt...
Sometimes I'm like, what the hell?
For the most part, not. I'll go ahead and, you know, say 9 times out of 10, not. The one time doesn't really make...
I'll go with 7. 7 out of 10.
But Matt, if I had to ask you,
that's because you have lower
standards. Diametric, you know, one or the other, hot or not, Matt, what would you say? Hot or not, Lady Gaga?
Why do I have to pin it down?
I said
7 out of 10. Not.
7 out of 10, not.
7 out of 10,
that's
not.
An average of not.
You guys need to run for office.
So just say not.
Not. Fine.
Thank you.
You guys need to run for office.
Micah?
Yes?
Micah? Lady Gaga, hot or not?
Yeah, come on, man.
Well, I'm glad you asked because, you know, unlike you two, the politicians in the studio, I'm going to give you not only my explicit cut and dry yes or no answer. I'm going to get around to it, I promise. But I'm also going to release my tax returns.
We're the politicians.
But I'm going to release my tax returns from last year so that you can see all this stuff.
But not until April.
No. I'm going to go ahead and do it before we go to Florida because there's going to be another primary, and it's going to really kick me in the butt if I don't go ahead and just do that this week. So, yes.
What about that half of your contract from Fannie Mae? Are you going to
Whoa. We agreed we weren't going to talk about this kind of stuff on the show. I want to know, Lady Gaga, hot or not?
That's right. See, I was being a politician. I was completely skirting the issue. Hot or not? Okay, I'm going to say hot, and here's why.
You're a progressive.
It's been settled. It's been settled. No. Lady Gaga, here's why I'll say hot. Because I think that she is a cultural sex icon, whether or not she's bathing in blood or, you know, a vampire or something like that. You know what? That's what it is. She was just getting ready for the release of the new Dark Shadows film. And, hey, I'm excited about that. You know, I'm not going to go be blood-sucking anywhere or bathing in blood in hotel rooms. But if she were really involved in some sort of satanic ritual, why the hell would she be doing it in a hotel room? You know what it really amounted to? She and, like, two of her roadies or something like that are in there. And they're like, what can we do that's really going to creep them out? What is the most, you know, frigged up thing that we could possibly do to scare the hell out of these people? Oh, I got it.
And the thing is, it's not like this is behavior that's new in like pop music or
pop music.
Pop music or rock and roll music. I mean, this stuff's been going on for decades.
She's living.
For God's sake, just leave it alone.
And that's why I'm a proponent. Exactly what you said, Micah. Of, you know, what if she just went in and decided, what's the most messed up thing I can do to freak these people out?
It's obviously what she did.
That's why I'm a proponent of weird things, weird archaeological finds. They don't really have a purpose. Like, Stonehenge isn't really a clock. I'm sure a bunch of druids were like, what can we do to really confuse the hell out of all these future generations? I mean, that's what I do with my time capsules. I put weird stuff in time capsules.
Yeah, the pyramids. The biggest mud pie in the world. What are they? We're going to build a mud pie so big. No, let's not do mud. Let's literally make this thing out of stone. And that way it'll last for like 100 years, maybe 200. And then people like long after us are going to be looking at it thinking, what the hell were they doing?
Like the Sphinx, biggest joke ever.
That's right, exactly. It's all an archaeological comedy of errors.
And Red Pill Junkie just asked in the chat room. And for those of you who are listening, you can totally join the chat room. I moderate it, and I'm super nice. But Red Pill Junkie just asked, so you mean there's not going to be any blood bathing during the Paradigm Symposium? And Red Pill Junkie, my answer to you is, I will tell you the answer to that in an email.
In an email. We can't
Which pretty much means yes.
We can't give full disclosure right now.
We're going to be bathing in blood.
It may be a behind
Giorgio Tsoukalos' blood.
Oh, hush. No. I'll tell you what, though. No. Truthfully. That's really good. First segment. We haven't even completed the first segment of this week's show, and we've already mentioned Paradigm Symposium 2012. Folks, let me go ahead and just put it out there. If you're a new listener to the program and you don't know about Paradigm Symposium, Scotty Roberts of Intrepid Magazine and I are working day and night. Look, let me just tell you, it was literally, I mean, I'm kind of a darkling, creature of the night anyway, but I was taking calls from Scotty, I think, at 12:45 Monday night. I was on the air with my friend Astrid Stromberg. I went on Astrid's radio program, Brilliant Essence, and it was a panel discussion, so fortunately there were about seven of us in there. And I literally got a telephone call from the producer of a very well-known radio program. Let me just put it to you like this. We're negotiating to try and get some of the very best guests in the business. This is going to be themed toward the ancient aliens, artificial intelligence, mysteries of space and science, and of course, UFOs. It's going to be incredible. This is going to be held in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October. It's the Paradigm Symposium. You'll be able to hear not only from guys like me and Scotty, and of course, you know, we're going to be broadcasting this program live from Paradigm Symposium, but we're also going to have a number of fantastic guests. Philip Coppens, who's going to be joining us on the program next week. We're actually going to have Philip on the show as a guest next week, but Philip's going to be speaking. We've got Nick Redfern, Marie D. Jones, a lot of people. As a matter of fact, I'm sure if you listen to this program, you've already heard some of the names that we've got lined up. Some of them are so big, I personally am hesitant to actually say them until I've gotten the contracts in the mail. And let me tell you, we are working on all that right now. You don't want to miss this. Keep listening to the program and keep your eyes on www.graylianreport.com because we're going to have more information about Paradigm Symposium where you can find it right there on the website. You don't want to miss this one. And I'll tell you what, if there's any single event that you visit this year, if there's any single paranormal event that you visit in 2012, before the world ends, before the whole crap house goes up in flames, as Jim Morrison said, you need to make it to the Paradigm Symposium. I'll expect to see you there. You'll get to hear me. You'll get to learn about our new book project that's going to be coming out here later this year. And of course, well, you'll get to meet Chris and Matt and I. More on that and much more right after this on the Graylane Report.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
As a parent, you can't help but look at your child and wonder what the future holds. You may dream about the possibility of your son or daughter becoming a professional athlete or a renowned heart surgeon. But while you're dreaming, consider this. The odds that your child will be diagnosed with autism are 1 in 110. Knowing the signs of autism and getting an early diagnosis could make a world of difference to your child and to you. To learn the signs, visit AutismSpeaks.org, brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
We're your light in the darkness. We are your escape back to reality, your sanity in an insane world, an insane world. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Welcome back to the program. We're discussing, among other things, Lady Gaga, Satanic Ritual, the tragic death of young Hadal babies. But don't feel too bad because, you know, again, you know, you just take the peelings.
They
and
just
you,
grow back.
Yeah, you put them back in the ground and they grow back. You
know? I want to point out, though, right, regardless of what Lady Gaga has done,
has or has not
has
done.
Or
this
has,
is unconfirmed.
Has or has not done. It can't be half as bad as Avatar.
Avatar, yes, the ultimate of all wickeds.
It is the most satanic and demonic movie ever made, ever in the history of the world ever.
Horrifically evil. Yes.
End quote, Mark Driscoll.
Well, you know, speaking of, I don't know why this reminds me of this, but did you guys see this story yesterday that was developing in Nashville, Tennessee? Senator Rand Paul had been detained because he went through one of these body scanners, a full body scanner. They noticed an anomaly. He was asked to submit to a body pat-down, and the senator refused because he had said in the past, let me see if I can recall the exact quote. I think that the senator had referred to these as, maybe I'm paraphrasing here, but the epitome of insult. Okay, I think his actual words may have been the universality of insult, the idea of the full-body pat-down. Now, keeping in mind, within the last couple of weeks, we had a couple of grandmas who apparently, when asked, submitted to searches that the TSA later came out and said, after one of these women pressed charges, you know, and they said that they were, or rather they were suing the TSA over this incident, one of the TSA officials, one of the official spokespeople came out and said, yes, they actually overstepped the boundaries of required procedure in those instances. In other words, maybe these women are actually justified in their complaint against the TSA.
Well, I mean, Mike, what do you want the TSA to do? Just this past week, a 65-year-old woman got on a plane from Dallas, I believe it was, to somewhere on the East Coast. It doesn't matter where she was going because she didn't end up going. They got her off the plane because she had, I think it was a 38 special in her knitting bag or her laptop bag. And they saw it when the bag went through the X-ray scanner, but they didn't catch her till she was on the plane and the plane was about to take off. I thought, you know, when you see something untoward in the X-ray scanner mm-hmm. thing on that little conveyor belt, the person watching it would just be like, derp a derp a derp, oh, a gun.
Oh, we better stop them.
And they let her go. Because she said, oh, I didn't know there was a big, huge revolver in my my laptop bag. I completely forgot. Oh, well, that's okay. You're not brown. Go on home.
Well, the thing is that this is what kills me, though. When I was following the story about Senator Paul of Kentucky, of course, this is the same Senator Paul whose father right now is still in the GOP race for president. Rand Paul, he wouldn't submit to a pat-down, okay, which, as I understand, the TSA officials said that this would have to just be a localized pat-down. The anomaly was spotted, I think, lower in one of the lower regions on his leg, one of his legs, and so they were going to have to check that area. But he said, no, I will not submit to a pat-down. I will go back through the scanner so that you can see again, but I will not submit to a pat-down because there's no object. Well, he was detained. Now, TSA officials said that Senator Paul was not detained. But according to one of the senator's spokespeople with his staff, they said, well, he was withheld from being able to get back, you know, on board his plane. He was detained from being able to go back through the scanner and told he had to submit to some kind of, that he had to submit to some sort of a, you know, a search, a mandatory search. So they said, we don't know what your definition, TSA, of detainee is, but this is what ours is. And yes, the senator was detained. So, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because it's been kind of a running commentary, that we provided on this program in the past with regard to the TSA, their activity, and when. Now, I understand, yes, we have to keep people safe, but the thing is that the TSA, to date, as I understand it, has not managed to capture a single potential terrorist at this point. Now, many would argue that, well, because of the institution of something like the TSA, no terrorist is going to be stupid enough to get on board one of these planes. I would say, contrary to that, that if they wish to do it, they will try to find a way. And this is what is invoked concerns, of course, about full-body searches, cavity searches, and things along those lines as these potential terrorists get more creative about their attempts at trying to terrorize the free world. But that said, you know, and I know that, and this is one thing that people have brought to the table, they said, but Senator Paul shouldn't be held to any kind of standard different from the American people. If anyone else should be expected to receive a pat-down, then so should he. Well, of course, and he knows that too. However, he refused the pat-down. He's not saying that there should be any kind of double standard. His philosophical stance is there shouldn't have to be a pat-down to begin with.
Well, and I thought that I thought you had a choice, either the scan or the pat-down. I didn't think you did both.
If you refuse to go through the scanner, then you have to submit to a pat-down. Now,
yeah, but he went through the scanner.
And he said after the anomaly was spotted, I will go through the scanner again. We will do this twice. And they said, no, right now our procedure is that there was an anomaly which seemed apparently to be indicative of perhaps a metallic object or something on his leg. And they said, no matter who you are or how well we know you, you must, according to procedure, submit to a pat-down. And he said, no. Again, having previously referred to the full-body pat-downs, pat-downs and searches as being the universality of insult. Therefore, he was detained. So, you know, that story, I think, you know, of course, the Ron Paul for President campaign, they're kind of, you know, I don't say that they're cashing in on it, but they're certainly making a big story out of this. And I hope that I think that they're hoping to try and utilize this to gain a little bit of notoriety and a little bit of attention right now as we're heading into Florida. I look at it for different reasons because I'm a little terrified of the way that these institutions and these agencies, whether or not they're effective, you know, I think that right now it's still pretty questionable with regard to an agency like TSA, but I'm pretty terrified when there are things like what we've been seeing recently going on. Not the detainees so much of senators, but of little old ladies, you know, in their colostomy bags and things like that being searched. And then, oh, well, you know, yeah, we didn't really have to do what we did to these gals. And now that they're going to be pressing charges, yeah, we're going to have to come out and say, yes, we kind of did more than we really were required to do. I'm sorry, why did you do that? What was the purpose of that? What on God's green earth calls for harassing little old ladies? These are the last people, although apparently, as you said, some of them may be known for carrying weapons in their laptop cases. Why on earth, though, of all people, if you're going to target anybody, would you take not one but two grandmas aside and submit them to searches that overstep the required procedures of what your agency requires?
There's only one explanation, Micah.
Okay, I'm glad you've got
that
one, Matt.
That is that our enemy, they are masters of disguise.
Masters of disguise, okay.
Well, you want to know what the solution to all of this is. All okay. This hullabaloo. You go through the scanner, they find an anomaly, they want to pat you down. You say no. The answer to all of this is, screw it, I'm taking a Greyhound.
Yeah, well, that's what Jesse Ventura's done, and I'll just tell you right now.
Have you ever been on a Greyhound?
I've looked at a Greyhound.
Have you ever, like, ridden on a Greyhound?
I bet it would be super interesting.
Oh, my Lord.
You can hang out
Lord.
With all the winos.
All the meth addicts.
Heck yeah. At least no one's going to be sleeping. It'll be a party all night
That's
long.
Right, yeah. Nobody's going to be sleeping. They're all going to be sitting there. They're going to have, like, grab the nearest weapon. I have a pen. Yeah. I'm sharpening my pencil to a
okay,
point.
Okay, I got a great bus ride game. Scratch yourself on the neck until you start bleeding. And go.
No, Chris, I can just totally see Chris sitting on a Greyhound with, like, a little blanket, and he's got, like, a dagger underneath it, and he's just, like, barely got his eyes open enough.
This is why we need,
like,
the webcam
keeping
on.
Keeping an eye on everyone. And
look, just turn the webcam on.
At which point I'll be like, help me. Help me.
I think we have a...
He'll turn into a homunculus.
I think we have a little homunculus in the studio, yes. Oh, gosh. That's really good. Hey, you know, changing gears a little bit here. I don't want to harp on the TSA thing too much, but, you know, again, I don't think Senator Rand Paul is the issue. I actually appreciate him, you know, in terms of the symbolism behind his refusal to admit to the pat-down. I think if I were he, I would do the same thing. And again, one of the terrifying things to me is we hear not it's not Senator Rand Paul I'm concerned about. Okay? He's drawing attention to the issue. But what I'm concerned about is when Grandma gets on there and is made to partially disrobe, you know, and something so private and personal as, you know, a colostomy bag or something like that is having to be examined. Have you never seen one of these before? Do you know what purpose this serves? It's not a bomb. And then we have... And
go
then,
ahead and pop it.
Yeah, it may become a bomb here in a moment. And then we've got the stories of little children, 2 years old, 3 years old, you know, being made again partially to disrobe. I'm one of these people who, if it were my child and I were seeing some individual trying to take the clothing off of my child, even though it is, again, air quotes here, procedural, that really makes me sick. That really, really bothers me. There's got to be a point beyond which we don't go. Okay, there's got to be a boundary. There's got to be a point of reason. And with regard to the TSA, there are so many variables to this point that I don't think we've defined those boundaries carefully enough. And as long as there are individuals involved in the procedural scans and searches, we're always going to have those kind of variables. It's never going to remain constant. There's always going to be that instance where somebody ends up being subjected to something that goes well beyond the limits of what should be acceptable in our society. That's all I'm going to say. I'm done. That's all I'm going to say. So changing gears, I do want to draw attention to something we've got up at GraylianReport.com. I was contacted, I guess it was actually just yesterday, by a British UFO researcher by the name of Mr. Peter Glenn. And if you go to GraylianReport.com and you look, I think it's probably our lead story there at the site right now, GraylianReport.com, GraylianReport.com, the story's titled, "Was a Genuine Unidentified Saucer Filmed Over Crest Woods?" Now, I'll tell you, I've looked at this video. We've all looked at this video. I've had a number of others look at this video. What we're seeing here does not look like a large flying disc, per se. What we see here are, as one user, one commenter who viewed this has said, they're just lights. The saucer angle comes in from according to what the witnesses were saying, and I've asked Peter, again, he is a ufologist based out of the Wales area in the UK. He has been talking with the witnesses who managed to film this. There were two young boys. Their mother, of course, substantiates what was going on, what was being seen. One of the witnesses, I think the older of the two boys, said that you could see a saucer. I'm trying to get Peter, as a matter of fact, to follow up with these individuals, give us more information, and try and determine whether indeed the camera only allows us to see lights, and they were able to see what they said was some sort of a saucer object to which these lights were attached, or if just the lights were visible, and that they gave the impression of some sort of a round disc-shaped object. Now, indeed, from watching the video, you can get that impression at times that there might have been some sort of a large disc-shaped object. Whatever this thing was, if it was some sort of a plasma-like manifestation occurring in the sky, whether they were lights or something like that, or some sort of electrical phenomena irradiating around the exterior of some kind of unidentified craft, I don't know. But it's a weird bit of video. Here's what Peter Glenn had to say specifically about this. The lights appear to be located either above an area known as the Crest Woods, in front of Crest Woods, or just behind or above the area. This was filmed around 3 o'clock in the morning and lasted longer than 6 minutes. The witnesses are utterly reliable, according to Glenn, as they are not UFO fanatics. I admit that I am a bit of a UFO hunter, and what makes this credible is the evidence that the boys have presented. 3 o'clock in the UK on January 3rd in the year of 2012. So this is a very recent piece of footage. He says it's a good film, and what he feels are good witnesses to what is being described as an unexplained event. And to quote one of the witnesses, indeed, he says, "It's amazing. I can see the saucer." You can hear that in the actual footage. So we put this up at GraylianReport.com. If you haven't seen it yet, go to the website right now. Have a look. This is probably, I would say at very least, again, UFO, unidentified flying object or objects in this case, because these may be separate objects of some sort. Whatever UFOs actually may be in this instance, this is, without question, the best UFO video I've seen in 2012 yet. There haven't probably been all that many that have really gotten a lot of attention, but this is by far one of the best. And Peter contacted me directly and gave us permission to link this at GrailianReport.com. So check that out at the website. It's front and center. Was a genuine unidentified saucer filmed over Crest Woods. And I don't know. I'm not sure if what we're seeing here is a saucer or if it is some sort of, again, like I've kind of suggested already, maybe some sort of a ball lightning-like phenomenon. Okay? But we have gotten a few comments from others. People, some of the listeners have written in with their comments. Dale writes, at face value, it appears credible. The family speech doesn't seem orchestrated that appears in the video. And other than the younger child being prompted at length about the length of time that the object was observed, his statement of, quote, I forgot, as seen in the video, could be an indicator of maybe a script. But although I don't feel this is necessarily the case. Overall, according to Dale, it doesn't appear to be contrived or rehearsed. He goes on to say, technical analysis is way beyond my purview, but in a lifetime around military and civilian aircraft, the object they film resembles nothing I've ever seen. We also got a word from our good friend, who's, I believe, in the chat room right now, Red Pill Junkie of DailyGrill.com. He says, I'd like to know if more neighbors managed to watch the lights, or even just hear the bang that caused the young cameraman to look out his bedroom window, because apparently, yes, he said that he heard a loud noise, which initially drew his attention to the objects. Now, of course, that's significant for obvious reasons, for those who follow the strange and Fortean news sources, because this is something we've been talking about. As a matter of fact, we opened the show last week. Yes, it was Cthulhu, wasn't it? No, the bang noise. You know, there have been all these reports about these loud noises heard around the world. One of them, which occurred just a little over a week ago, was heard within 5 miles of our studios here in Western North Carolina.
Don't you mean hundreds of miles up and then 5 miles
Well,
over?
I mean 5 miles from, you know, our terrestrial location.
Oh, okay.
Which would technically be a few hundred miles away from us. But
yep.
By virtue of our... Yeah, but you know. You know! So, you know, this is something that's fairly interesting to me. You know! It is. It is very interesting to me. And my reason for saying it's interesting is because we've already had all these reports of these noises. These strange noises heard around the world. And I've heard a multitude of different potential explanations for these various phenomena, okay? But the thing is that while some of the apparent noises that are heard in these videos seem to be more similar to viral marketing, I think there's also what's called a waterphone device that's sort of like an instrument that can be played with a bow and can create very strange, shrill kind of otherworldly sounds. That a waterphone was described, I think, by a UFO examiner, Roger Marsh, as being a potential cause for some of the sounds at least seen in the videos, but that doesn't explain all of the explosions and other strange noises, many of which either are emanating from the sky or from, you know, mountainous regions. Maybe there's some sort of widespread kind of tectonic something going on. Who knows? We also got word from Alan, who wrote in that the video was fascinating. He says it needs to be professionally analyzed as soon as possible. In his opinion, the video looks to be of very poor quality, not the witnesses' faults, of course, and apparently I think they were using either a very low-quality video camera or a cell phone to record the footage. But he said that there well may have been features visible to the naked eye, which the camera failed to pick up, as I'd kind of explained with regard to these witnesses describing that they could see a saucer. A great pity this event didn't happen in daylight. It might have constituted the undeniable evidence Richard Dolan often talks about. On the other hand, maybe it's just a hoax, for all we know. He went on to say also that he lives in the UK and recently just discovered our podcast by way of Mysterious Universe, our friends from down under. Love your work. Very entertaining and thought-provoking. Thank you, Alan, very much for that. And, of course, we always try to keep people's thoughts good and provoked. Well, we're provoking people in other ways, probably, and hopefully they're not going to get too angry at us. That's, why do you think we broadcast from a bunker? We realize this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's kind of off the beaten path, especially in terms of the mainstream. You know, that reminds me of one more email I got. I might as well just share with folks. You know, my new book coming out later this year, one of two. One's going to deal with an eldritch tale of the dark, gothic macabre of the southern United States. But the other is going to deal with something rather interesting. And it's actually a book called, we got a working title for it, and I think I can go ahead and put that out there. It's going to be called The UFO Singularity. Singularity, of course, being a reference to a technological intelligence explosion that will occur in the future that will probably lead to artificial intelligence and greater than human intelligence that's technologically created by, you know, entities like ourselves and potentially leading to non-human intelligent entities and all kinds of things. A lot of broad concepts that really work very well in the context of studying UFOs. So I was corresponding with a researcher earlier this week and, asking if they would be interested in further correspondence about this because, as I often try and do, being more skeptically minded and also trying to, though rooting myself in study of something like UFOs, I try and outsource to people in other areas of science so as to gain a bit of perspective when I'm talking about these things, especially in my written work. This individual wrote back to me. I contacted them basically, I'm not going to give their name, but I'd contacted this individual with hope of basically interviewing them with regard to their interest in artificial intelligence and technological singularity. I mentioned, however, that I'm a UFO researcher. Here's what they wrote back and said. They said, I have become disinterested in the UFO phenomenon. This is in part due to lack of rigor on part of the UFO community, as well as sheer lack of evidence. I do not wish to engage in speculative conversation when there are so many fruitful scientific pursuits within the transhumanist realm. I wish you the best on your research. There is no evidence of UFOs, Mr. Hanks.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention at all, but I caught the last 2 seconds of that email, and for some reason, I am immediately infuriated.
Let me read it to you again.
No, that's not necessary.
No, I think it is.
No,
I do
wouldn't,
not.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
I think you need to hear this. It's for your own good, because listen, the UFO phenomenon, okay, has become disinteresting to at least one member of the scientific establishment because of a lack of evidence and a lack of rigor on part of the UFO community. And therefore, this individual told me, point blank, I do not wish to engage in speculative conversation when there are so many fruitful scientific pursuits within the transhumanist realm. And they were nice about it, you know, so I'm not trying to demonize anyone. That's why I'm not going to give out any names or anything. But my heart sank a little bit when I got that message. And here's why. Because if we... And let me ask you this. Did Einstein never go out and stare up at the sky and say, what if? Did Heisenberg never wonder what else there might be out there in the universe? Did Oppenheimer never say what kinds of things came before and who knows could potentially come after us? What great scientific mind has not engaged in speculation at some point that led to innovation, which furthers our understanding of nature and the cosmos around us? When did speculation become bad? Now, I understand if it's unfounded speculation about something silly, but the justification for that statement, I'm not going to engage in speculation with regard to UFOs because of a sheer lack of evidence. Anyone who listens to this show knows where to look for that evidence. And if you don't know, I'm going to tell you right now. You can go to any of the major intelligence organization websites, FBI, CIA, NSA, and not just here in the United
States. Conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, I know, right, exactly. Yeah, I'm a conspiracy theorist because they're already, these organizations are posting their official documents that were at one time under the jurisdiction of each of these organizations, indicative of their obvious interest in this subject because of a national security reasons. You know, Nick Redfern had even talked about how, in his book, On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, that indeed the Air Force and other agencies had taken an interest in a lot of ufologists, especially during the Cold War, and the reason for that had been because many in intelligence agencies were concerned that ufologists were studying UFOs as a cover for their interest in secret military craft, and therefore certain government agencies would keep an eye on some of these individuals out of fear that they might be actually trying to obtain information about secret stealth aircraft and then get that information to the enemy, things like that. You know, for those of us who are genuinely interested, see, I'll be honest with you, stealth aircraft and, you know, secret, you know, human-made aircraft, yeah, that's interesting to me. But, you know, my genuine interest is in the more unexplainable and the less, at least conveniently plausible, reports of UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon. And therefore, in that sense, while I'm interested in those things, I also recognize that various government agencies, for different reasons, have been interested in them as well. Whatever these things may be, intelligent life from elsewhere, you know, like our guest, from recently, Nigel Kerner had said, you know, robotic intelligence from another realm. Maybe they're interdimensional intelligence. For all we know, there could be some sort of a, like the late Mac Taney said, crypto-terrestrial, some sort of indigenous species that has maintained some degree of secrecy, you know, and maintained, an ability to maintain kind of, you know, a hidden presence here on Earth in some way. Whatever the case may be, there's something to the UFO phenomena, and there is enough to the mystery that these sorts of intelligence agencies, and not just here in the United States, but in other parts of the world too, have become actively involved in UFO research at various times. But there's no evidence. There's absolutely a lack of evidence. I think the problem is that there may be a lack of hard evidence for things like alien abduction, but these poor people in the scientific community want to lump all of this stuff in together. Alien abduction, UFO contactees, you know, UFO sightings, all this stuff, obviously the same thing.
And yet, not to, you know, push my point, because I seem to be doing that a lot this episode.
No, might as well, go ahead.
There's no evidence, you know, academically, there's no evidence for UFOs whatsoever, but there's a large percentage of scientists, well-respected scientists in academia, who, while, you know, loving science and, you know, logic and all that, are in concurrence with that, evangelical Christians. So there's no evidence for UFOs, but angels, totally.
Well, I think, you know, and I don't think that the idea, and I know that this is what you're trying to do, but, you know, we don't want to demonize one particular group, but I think that the...
No, I'm not, but I'm just saying, if, like, those people, there's no evidence for this, it's BS, but there's also no evidence for this, but I'm all right with it.
Well, I think that what it is that we begin to see that there are double standards. Okay, you know, if you want to say, for instance, an evangelical, you know, wants to claim that there is justification for faith in angelic deities, you know, God, you know, the Judeo-Christian, you know, tradition in general. That's one example. You could also look at, and, you know, and whether you prescribe to that belief or not, that's fine. You know, I was raised a Christian myself. Like anyone else, I think, you know, at some point, I think all thinking Christians will begin to question aspects of faith, you know, but I think that also, if you're a believer, that lends to your own potential to strengthen your own faith. You know, or perhaps even maybe redefine what faith is and what the importance of it is. But for others, you know, let's look at other areas just as well. What about, for instance, not black holes? Let's say dark matter. Okay, what do we know for certain about dark matter? I mean, have we held it? Have we captured it in a lab? Have we photographed it? Have we filmed it? Have we recorded it? Have we sat down and had lunch with it? You know, what do we really know about dark matter? Dark matter is more of a concept that is used to fill a void in our understanding, okay, anomalies, if you will, in physical principles that we can observe about the universe. And so we hypothesize about the existence of something such as dark matter so that it fills a void and completes a potential that we're trying to come to a greater, fuller understanding about with regard to reality and the universe. Now, the problem with that is that in the scientific community, people will tell you all day that there's no evidence of UFOs when, clearly, there's plenty of evidence for, and again, I want to pick my words very carefully here, there's plenty of evidence for the existence of unidentified flying objects that appear to be intelligently controlled. They may not be aliens from space, but there's plenty of evidence that there's something going on. But to anybody who wants to say that they're, because they are a scientist, that they are certain that there's no evidence of UFOs, I want to know one thing. Where's the evidence for dark matter? You know, show me the evidence for something like that. Show me the evidence for these wonderful things that the scientific community thinks that justify their arguments so well that they know all things about the far-reaching cosmos. We don't know jack. We'll talk more about that when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. All right, guys, I know you've been putting it off. Your thirst for knowledge is incredible, insatiable, but your wallet says otherwise. So you haven't been able to subscribe to all those classy magazines out there bringing you to the edges of the fringe just like you and I do every week here on the Graylian Report. Well, good news for you. You can now subscribe to Intrepid Magazine for an entire year and just pay $19.95. Really? That's it? It's no joke. $19.95 will get you an entire year of incredible insight from authors like Nick Redfern, Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Visit www.intrepidmag.com today and feel your mind expanding tomorrow.
Yeah.
Georgia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
If you visit www.graylianreport.com, we've got all kinds of goodies. I mean, we've got nudie pics of our engineer, Matt Oakley, posted at the website. Everybody wants to go see that.
You got to find them, though.
They're hidden.
Imagine
it's an Easter egg.
imagine the most awesomely misshapen fall gourd you could ever find, and then multiply that times...
That's a baby Hadle.
Three. And that's Matt.
Wait, is Matt a Hadle? Are you a Hadle?
He doesn't...
Chris, are we going to get into this? No. Are we going to get into this?
Matt's like a Cylon, but he's like one of the Cylons that looks like a human. Yep. He just doesn't know he's a robot yet.
That's it.
So when someone does the secret post-hypnotic suggestion word, he flips out and tries to blow up Galactica.
And what is the secret post-hypnotic word this week?
Well, apparently...
Well, no, don't say it. Send it to me in the private messenger. Hey, speaking of private messengers... messengers. We got to have people send messages to us as well. If you'd like to send us a message, you can always email us info@graylianreport.com. You can also send a text message to us anytime at the following number. Get your pen and paper ready. I'll twiddle my thumbs for a moment and wait. All right, I think you've had time. It's 828-367-7201. You can also call into the program if you'd like, 828-398-4886, and Skype users can reach us anytime with Skype ID Graylian Report. Those are the ways to reach us. You know, and speaking of the Graylian Report, while you're there at the website, go have a look. We've also got another article up that some of you may find interesting. Some of you may just find it horribly redundant. But the story is called, Here We Go Again, The Reason White House UFO Petitions Keep Failing. Is if you haven't heard me talk about why this continues to occur enough already, you might just want to have a look. And actually, that makes me feel good since we're talking about redundancy, because the Redundant Daily Redundant is out. Have you heard about this one? It's a new newsletter, the Redundant Daily Redundant. Yep, that's really, it's true. And actually, my good friend John...
That's really getting old, man.
Well, an old friend of mine, a fellow UFO researcher, to borrow the convention, as given by Mr. J. Edward Ruppelt of the early days of Project Blue Book. Okay, Mr. Ruppelt, of course, referred to these things as UFOs, that acronym, and he said that should be pronounced UFO, not UFO, but he said call them UFOs, which no one really does, but yes, indeed.
You call them UFOs all the time.
I do that, but more, you know, just to be funny, I mean, because I think that time has shown that more people prefer and feel more comfortable calling them UFOs. Now, I'll tell you the exception to that is when I speak to people, especially from Europe, a lot of people from Europe tend to say UFO.
When you said Europe, I immediately heard someone say, oh, so you mean you're talking about UFOs? As voiced by the Swedish chef.
So you mean there's UFOs out there?
UFO.
That's right. We've got UFOs. Yeah. So, but anyway, the Redundant Daily Redundant apparently talked a little bit about this as well. And speaking of that UFO footage, you can visit the Graylian Report to read our reasons for why these UFO petitions keep failing. Because, get this, I just found out this the other day. This is news to me, folks. Apparently there was another one of these petitions that popped up. This one was titled, Provide the Public an Honest Explanation into the 2008 Sighting of an Unknown Aerial Object Above Stephenville, Texas. I love how catchy and concise these names are. You know, but I think that there are a number of reasons why these things keep landing in the dirt and, or crashing into the dirt. The sands of Roswell, or the sands of time itself, perhaps. If you want to find out my thoughts about that, you can visit the Graylian Report. And, of course, you can also see this, what's being called genuine UFO footage. We had another one of our fans tweet that it's weird, but it's only lights. Well, that's true. What we're seeing are only lights, but what are the cause of the lights? What is the source behind the illumination seen in this video? I'd like to hear your thoughts. If you have thoughts on the mysterious nature of this UFO footage that we have posted at the website, of course, you can always email us, info@graylianreport.com. And if you visit graylianreport.com, one final thing, this is pretty easy for folks. If you visit in the top
toolbar there at the top of the page. On the far right, you'll see Grayley and Report on the Radio. Click that link, and it'll take you to a page with all of the call-in and contact information for reaching us here on the program. And that way, anyone can participate and pass along your own thoughts. You're also welcome just to go and actually post your comments there at the blog following the post itself. That's another fine way to pass your thoughts along. When we come back, we're going to be discussing technology of the future. The New York Times recently decided that they would crowdsource predictions for the future, for maybe the next 100 years, maybe the next several hundred years. What future technology is in store for us? Well, we'll find out more right after this on the Grayling Report. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Hi, Bob Tarmac from InceptionRadioNetwork.com. I'm going to clue you into a show that I listen to every single week. It's Inception Radio with Jamie Hannigan. It airs Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jamie always brings on new guests every single week on a variety of topics. UFOs, it's paranormal, it's time travel, conspiracy theory. It's everything, and Jamie covers it in depth. When does it begin? It's Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you there.
Theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grayling Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From our dark, mischievous little corner of the web, welcome back to the program. It's our second hour of this week's edition of the Grayling Report. I'm your happy host, Mr. Micah Hanks, broadcasting from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the Moho discontinuity. Yes, indeed. The mossy disquiet that is known as the Mohorovic discontinuity, hundreds of miles beneath where most of us tread about in our daily lives. I'm joined, as always, in studio by our fantastic studio staff, producer Chris Hayes and engineer Matt Oakley, who are working hard to make this program be all that it can be. And, of course, you, my dear friends out there in Gradio Land, can help us make this program even better on a weekly basis. If you want to visit www.graylianreport.com, it's as simple as clicking the donate button right there at the top of the page. You can send us donations, and you can actually make contributions to this operations in that way. And let me tell you right now, with the state of things as they are right now, every little bit helps. But I know that times are hard, and that's okay, because even if you can't help
with gracious monetary donations. We don't need that. We always like that, and we're gracious in the event that people are able to make those kind of contributions. But all we really need is your listenership. We always are so happy to have folks like you tuning in and listening to the program. And that said, if you aren't already following our exploits on the social networking sites, of course, you can find the Graylian Report on Twitter, so you can follow us on Twitter. And also, I want to direct your attention to our Facebook fan page. You should go over to the Graylian Report and like us there on Facebook. You know, we've got several hilarious photographs, and it seems that every picture of me either depicts me as a ghost or a vampire. I am apparently, yes, we thought that you were the only member of the undead that was actually a part of our staff, but apparently I am too, because here, there's one picture of me where I'm literally having an out-of-body experience, and you can only see this. This isn't posted at graylianreport.com or any place. This is exclusive to people who visit our Facebook page and like us on Facebook. You can see a picture of me having an out-of-body experience, okay, if you visit our Facebook page. And then, of course, we've also got this new picture of me. We were doing show prep the other night, and there's this photograph of me looking like a vampire. It's like, does this guy ever smile? Of course I do. I'm a very happy guy.
Well, what's even worse than you being either a vampire or a ghost is...
You being a potato baby?
Well, that too, but I don't know if anyone follows Micah's personal... what's it called? Facebook. But the other night he took a picture of himself as the elusive Tobey Maguire from Spider-Man 3.
Yes, I am the web-slinger of wonder indeed. But you know, all these images, you can learn more about this. You know, I see that there are a lot of folks out there right now who are talking about the Graylian Report. And if you'd like to come on board and learn about it, you can follow our exploits throughout the week, both at graylianreport.com and at our Facebook page. In fact, there's some additional content that goes up there at the Facebook page that you won't find anyplace else. So come on over and like us so that you can join in on the fun from week to week in between the programs, which we, you know, Chris, we keep hearing from people out there in listenership. They want us to start doing this program more than once a week. Guys, can we happen to do that? Is there any way that we can...
We only need to do one show a week.
Is that right, Ethic?
It's not like I've got better things to do.
Well,
the engineer's in.
Well, see, Matt just contradicted himself.
No, I think you just contradicted yourself. You clearly were the one. Okay,
hey,
no.
Hey, that was a direct quote.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is the continual on-air battle between our engineer and production staff here in the studio. You know what? It's getting to the point. That should have been our 2012 revolution. Revolution.
Revolution.
The Graylian Report.
Start the revolution.
Yeah, the Graylian Report is in itself a revolution. Our 2012 resolution should have been from the get-go to go ahead and to start doing this program more than once a week. But you know what? You know what?
Coming soon to an internet station near you, the Graylian Report, 7 days a week.
Well, that's what we really want. And speaking of live broadcasts, you know, we are going to be broadcasting live from the Paradigm Symposium event that we're going to be doing in Minnesota this October. Now, I understand that there were people out there in the chat room who were wanting to know why we... What was it, Chris, that they'd wanted to know?
Well...
this was regard to the Paradigm event.
Mention has been made that while we keep talking about the Paradigm Symposium, all we're doing is reiterating the fact that it's going to happen. We're not really explaining to people what all this amazing, amazing 4-day event is going to entail. I feel like we should probably, you know, leak, and when I say leak, I'm using air quotes, leak some info to the populace.
Okay, well, then you heard it here first. We'll leak some information right now. Now, the website's under development, and we've not gone live with that website yet, because right now we are still getting ticket prices negotiated, which we have been looking at a lot of the other events that are taking place around the country. We want to make something that is going to be both affordable for those who want to attend, but is, you know, also going to help us maintain what we need in order to be able to put on what I believe is going to be one of the best paranormal events anywhere in the country in 2012. If this goes well, this is going to be one of the best annual paranormal events, because you can rest assured we're going to do one each year. The Paradigm Symposium grew out of a funny idea that I had. I don't remember, you know, I expressed this idea to a number of people. I know that Joshua Warren and I for years have been saying that we wanted to have a weenie roast on, you know, December 21st, 2012. Because he and I both live here in Asheville, North Carolina. And we said, well, you know what? Let's get together and we'll have a weenie roast. And we'll see the end of the world out in style at a party with a bunch of people that we like, you know. And that'll be the end of the story. Literally, because the world's going to end, right? Well, then we began, I think, you know, when we started kind of really taking the idea of the Grailian Report and making this a more, you know, main line but not mainstream, and a very independent but a consistent, regular, weekly program, you know, taking the website presence and taking it to the next level. And let me tell you, by the end of 2012, we have remarkable plans in store for what we plan to do with this. It's going to be remarkable by the end of this year. And I can assure you of that, folks. Paradigm Symposium is going to have something to do with that, in fact. But that said, one of the jokes that we began to have, one of the running jokes that we began to have was that, well, maybe we should just have an end of the world party, but let's take it to the top of a building in some major metro, okay, some major metropolitan area, and let's invite a bunch of people from the paranormal community, and we'll just have a great big shindig to see the world out in style.
I wanted Daft Punk to be there.
Yeah, we wanted, I mean, seriously, this would just be a big party. If we're going to celebrate the end of the world, let's do it right. And then, you know, we got involved with Intrepid Magazine. And, of course, you know, I'm a writer, a staff writer now for Intrepid Magazine. And at one point, we joked enough about this to where the publisher and editor, Scotty Roberts, contacted me. And he says, you know, Micah, maybe you and I should think about doing an event together, you know, that would be Grailian Report and Intrepid Magazine, you know, present. And I said, well, you know, I've joked for a long time about having an end-of-the-world party. And we didn't take it any further than that for a while. And then I got in touch with him, and I mentioned it again. And he said, well, if we're going to do this, we've got to get on it. And I said, well, yeah. And one thing led to another. And before we knew it, we were entering the official beginning stages of planning for what we hope is going to be the event to end all events in terms of enlightenment and fringe, you know, science. And when I say enlightenment, again, you know, we're not going to be solely dealing with things like, you know, physics and, you know, astronomy and cosmology and these sorts of things. Those things will be a part of this, but we're also going to try and incorporate a lot of elements that don't necessarily appeal to the mainstream. You know, things like UFOs that there's absolutely no evidence for.
None.
None whatsoever. No evidence!
None evidence is the amount of evidence.
None evidence ever, anywhere. And therefore, we will not engage in any kind of speculative talk. But let me tell you, there's no speculation involved here. Paradigm Symposium, it's going to deal with artificial intelligence, ancient archaeology, you know, the ancient astronaut theories. We're going to also deal with ufology, holistic sciences, you know, those kind of things that are going to kind of steer us toward a new way of life, a new perception of reality. 2012 may not be the end of the world, but what we are looking at is a serious potential, I think, for a paradigm shift, a new way of thinking, and a better way of living. That's the theme that we're working with, and therefore we chose the name Paradigm Symposium.
Well, Micah, already in the chat room, one of our listeners, Bella Vendetta, has requested that we take our Paradigm Symposium to Chicago. And I would, you know, go ahead and explain why we can't do that on the chat room, but unfortunately, guys, my chat room module keeps messing up, and I'm having to reload the page.
The Hadals are chewing the wires again.
They're worse than cats.
They're really bad. They really get out of hand sometimes. But, well, you know, the thing is that we thought about a lot of, you know, Chicago was the city that I thought about. You know, my good friend, one of our field correspondents, Tom Cameron, who is an incredible martial arts master. I was looking at a video of him on Steve Harvey's program from a few years ago online recently, and I tell you, have you seen this video? It's hilarious. Steve Harvey is that guy is he's hilarious, and but
for some reason he's terrified Tom's gonna hurt his manhood.
He really in the video we should link that to the Grailian Report. But the thing is that Tom you know is such an accomplished practitioner of the martial arts, and even he's got this there's a kid. And I knew a lot of his students. I've actually met a lot of them, and, you know, I've hung out and, you know, had dinner with Tom many times. Tom and I, we stay in touch to this day, you know, and, you know, we've spoken on the telephone recently. We stay in touch via email, and, of course, he's a field correspondent for this program. And so we've had, in recent weeks, some updates about Mothman-like creatures seen in the Chicago area, which Tom Cameron had sent along to us and had commented on. So, you know, Tom Cameron's in Chicago. And he'd even, you know, being in Chicago, I'd thought that, you know, that might be a good location for this kind of thing. You know, if I have my way, I'm going to try and get Tom at Paradigm regardless. But the situation is such right now that, you know, we had to kind of look at what cities would be the best. And we were looking at one large southern city and then one large northern city. And we were weighing the options. And so what Scotty and I settled on was Minneapolis, where I don't think by October the weather's going to be really all that bad, if you know, any of the recent years are any indication. We're looking at the dates of October 11th
through the weekend of the 11th, which I think is going to go on through the 14th, and it's going to be in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So this is going to be a fantastic event. You know, again, dealing with all these sorts of subjects. Philip Coppens is going to be there, Nick Redfern, Marie D. Jones. You've got a lot of different people who are on board, and we're still confirming other guests. There are many other names that I could name, and we've already mentioned a few of them on this program, but literally right now I'm working out a lot of contractual agreements and things like this with these individuals to solidify the incredible lineup that we hope to have for this event. And soon we will also be, in addition to all this information going public and having it on the web, we're going to be starting a very aggressive marketing campaign. So those of you who are listeners of this program, if you'd like to find out how you can help promote this event and get the word out there to the world about this incredible symposium we're going to be having. I mean, this is going to be the event. If you do anything in 2012, you want to be there. And you can come hang out not only with all these fantastic individuals. There's going to be a huge banquet dinner that Ian Punnett of Coast to Coast AM is going to moderate. Ian has been so gracious to us and so helpful with this entire event. You know, all the people at Premier Network and Coast to Coast AM have been so helpful with this. But it's going to be so fantastic, and it's going to be so rocking. And yes, we're going to be broadcasting live, probably from Saturday night, which will be the night of the banquet, from Paradigm Symposium. So you don't want to miss this. I mean, there's going to be a live Graylian Report broadcast. We might just make that a part of the show. We might just do a live broadcast, you know, in front of a studio audience or something like that, for all
you know,
I know.
You know what we could do? We could strap the board to my chest.
Yeah.
And I could carry around a microphone. And I mean, I have no problem staying up. I could do a 96-hour live broadcast.
Well, we're going to be collecting audio from different speeches from speakers, you know, throughout the weekend. And I'll tell you, the funny thing is have you ever seen Bela Fleck and the Flecktones? You know, Future Man, Victor Wooten, he like wears that thing, you know, that so he can play electronic drums without actually being behind a kit. That's what you're going to look like. You're going to look like the Roboid version of Chris, wearing all the broadcast equipment strapped to your body all weekend so that you can record.
And you have to walk like a robot, too.
And see, the best part about that is that makes me producer / engineer.
He's going to be no. Matt gets to push all the buttons. They're just going to be on you.
Yeah, it's going to get a little weird.
It's going to be a little weird.
But I do want to say real quick, to kind of answer Bella Vendetta's question, don't worry, we are going to Chicago, not for the symposium. We're going to Chicago this year. It's going
to
be great.
As a matter of fact, you know, Bella, maybe you can pass along some information. We're going to hope to set up a live broadcast from Chicago when we visit Tom Cameron and our friends there, but that'll be later this year. More on that as it develops, and more in general right after this on the Graylian Report.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Of Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
To Killians and Fortean folk devils around the world, I have one thing to say. God, who forted in here?
Did you just say tequila?
No, yeah, I said Tukelians. Tukelians. You remember, you've got Forteans. Well, I propose we have a totally new word to describe people who are proponents of strange phenomena, and that is Keelian. A nod toward the late, Keelian? Great John Keel. Keelian, yes.
So there's no tequila?
No tequila, no.
I'm
Keel.
I'm going home.
Keel. Keel, yeah, tequila.
I was told there was going to be punch and pie and tequila.
Keel, my friend.
And so far,
yeah, I'll be a tequilian. Who knows? Somebody may have called me that already.
You know, what are the Hadels? Do the Hadels have any kind of alcohol or libations?
Vodka.
Vodka, what? Oh, potatoes.
Vodka.
Although, yeah. We can't talk about that because my Hadel High Priestess is kind of touchy.
Chris's little Hadel honey.
Babies.
Chris's got him a Hadel honey. You got you a Hadel honey, don't you? I just turned into Robert Downey Jr. from like Tropical Thunder.
Tropic Thunder?
Tropic, yeah.
Whatever. I can't say anything tonight.
What do you mean? Okay. What do you mean, you people?
You know, the Hadels. Never mind. Okay. Anyway, you know, getting to some actual news. First, before we get to this New York Times thing where they're crowdsourcing predictions from people, this is hyper interesting, and I want to get to that here in just a moment. But first, we do have one from space.com. The latest on huge solar eruptions, believed to have potential to be the strongest radiation storm that we have seen in at least the last 7 years, okay?
So not ever.
You know, here's the thing. By late 2012 or sometime by maybe around mid-2013, NASA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have been warning about the potential for dangers associated with coronal mass ejection and, you know, sunspot activity of the variety that could literally constitute electromagnetic pulse takedown of the electrical grid in large portions of Earth, or on large portions of planet Earth. So space.com reported earlier this week a powerful solar eruption is expected to blast a stream of charged particles toward Earth on January 24th. Guys, today's date is January 24th. This is believed to be potentially the strongest radiation storm since the 2005 rages on the sun. Early this morning, January 23rd, this is when the story was written, NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory caught an extreme ultraviolet flash from a huge eruption on the sun, according to skywatching website spaceweather.com. The solar flare spewed from the sunspot 1402, which is a region known on the sun that has become increasingly active as of late. Several NASA satellites, including the Solar Dynamics Observatory, the Solar Heliospheric Observatory, and the Stereo spacecraft, observed the massive sun storm. A barrage of charged particles triggered by this morning's solar flare is expected to hit Earth tomorrow at around 9 a.m. Eastern, which would have been 9 a.m. this morning, according to experts at the Space Weather Prediction Center. According to NOAA, this was the strongest solar radiation storm since May 2005, and as a precaution, polar flights on Earth were expected to be rerouted within a few hours of writing this story. Now, right now, so far as I know at least, we haven't had any serious problems that seem to result from this. In fact, as I'm reading this, I'm actually scanning a Google News feed about this to try and see what indeed may have been the case. This time, I think we got off okay, but you know what the problem is going to be in the future? Is that indeed they say that if these incredibly concentrated solar ejections continue to grow and to continue to become more, for lack of a better term, violent, what we may end up facing is something where this irradiation of particles toward planet Earth impacting our geomagnetic sphere around our planet, okay, and resulting in what would amount to being an electromagnetic pulse shockwave that would emanate toward Earth. The result could be literally a takedown of our electrical infrastructure. Now, what happens if you don't have electricity for a few days? Most people would get by okay. What happens when you don't have electricity for more than a week? You know, if you've got
For instance, people in rest homes or in hospitals who are hooked up to life support systems, you start having a lot of problems. You also start having a lot of problems when food and other things that have to remain cool or at frozen temperatures, when those things are no longer able to be frozen or kept at these kind of cool temperatures, then you also begin to have serious problems. When you don't have heat and you have no way to provide heat in major metropolitan areas in the wintertime,
then people start eating other people.
Well, you know, that's exactly what Bill Forstchen talked about in his book, One Second After. Now, that was an EMP that occurred as a result of a nuclear weapon detonated into space. But, and it's funny because Bill lives right here in Black Mountain, which is literally, what, probably 20, 25 minutes from our studio.
Yeah, if that.
If that, right? And so Bill, the thing with Bill is that in that book, you know, actually one of our local weeklies around the Asheville area, the Mountain Express, they interviewed Bill when that book came out. And one of the things that he said is, and of course he doesn't talk about this in the book because it's a fiction novel about kind of, you know, what if, what would happen if in the event of an electromagnetic pulse attack against the United States. But one of the things that he talked about outside the scope of that novel was, well, you know, the same sort of thing could potentially happen and entirely as a result of natural circumstances, solar irradiation. And what is the realistic potential for something like that? Are we in danger? Well, many people think that we are. In fact, NASA continually updates their website with information about the what-if scenario that could literally lead to a doomsday as we know it. And doomsday could occur, well, much sooner than many of us would like to see it. But that said, not to be alarmists, we'll keep an eye on this, of course, throughout the years as we continue to monitor the situation. And, of course, any time there's information regarding the strange and the unusual or the potentially very, very, very dangerous, our heliospheric gods up there decide to take out their aggressions on planet Earth and knock out the electrical grid. Well, you'll be able to hear plenty about that here on this program. It's something that means a lot to us, and of course it means a lot to our listeners, because without electricity we can't have our weekly conversations like we do.
You just said if our gods knock out the electricity, then people will hear about it.
I can't hear you.
You said if the gods knock out our electricity, people will hear about it on our show. And you know what, Micah?
No, I said you're gonna hear about it on the program.
Yeah, you're gonna hear about it on the program, which we need electricity to provide. And I'm all for that, but I am not getting on the bicycle power generator again.
No, I think you're chafed. you're taking my comments out
Literally?
Of order. You're taking them out of order. Yeah.
No, that was the exact phrase you said.
What I was saying was that if this is going to happen, you'll hear about it here. If it happens, obviously, as I had stated, we wouldn't be able to do the program because we wouldn't have electricity, would we?
But we will have electricity. We've got a bicycle power generator down here.
But the thing is if other people don't have electricity, they can't tune into the program, can they?
Tesla coils.
Does everybody?
Tesla coils.
How many of you have Tesla coils or bicycle power generators? And that, along with a zombie, producer who can jump on the thing and pedal away and provide.
I said I wasn't doing it again.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
I'm still chafed.
I thought you were, you know, what good am I? What good am I as a maniacal leader broadcasting to the masses from my bunker underground if I haven't got minions who are willing to do my bidding?
We have an endless supply of potato people.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe they'll be my minions. I need new minions.
You need minions.
You know who else needs new minions? The captain. If you aren't a fan yet, I don't know if you like these as much as I do, but web comics are the big thing. Now, check this out. One of my very favorite, absolutely my number one favorite webcomic today, is called Romantically Apocalyptic. And the character on Romantically Apocalyptic is known as Z-Captain.
I like Snipey.
Z-Captain, yeah, he's got Snipey, and he's got, what's the other one's name? He's got these minions, you know.
And what? They introduced a new character called Pilot.
Yeah, Pilot, yes. What this has to do with is, this is a webcomic where these characters are these fellows who all wear, like, gas masks and stuff like that, and they exist in a post-apocalyptic future. And it is one of the most hilarious, incredibly illustrated comics on the web. You can check it out at romanticallyapocalyptic.com. They update weekly with new editions of the comic strip, and
We'll put the link in the show notes, and I put it also in the chat room for those of you who are listening live.
Yeah, and those who aren't tuning in every week and listening live, what is wrong with you? I know some of our listeners overseas, you know, they aren't able to tune in and listen each week because, you know, it's incredibly late. In fact, I'd hoped maybe to see about having Peter Glenn, our British ufologist friend who sent along this UFO video, I'd hoped to maybe get him on the program just as well. But then again, I think it's really, really, it's the middle of the night right now over in the UK. So I understand some of you aren't able to listen. But for those thousands of you who download the podcast each week here in the United States, you know, you're really missing out in the interactivity that comes with being able to listen on the, you know, on the web as we broadcast live. Hey, I'm not, you know, you're not my minions yet, and so I can't command you, I can't order you, but I can strongly suggest that if you don't start listening to the show live, well, the captain and many of us down here in the Hollow Earth will be very, very upset.
Especially because next week we're going to be raffling off a date with producer Chris Hayes.
Oh, we are. Well, what about the Paradames, you know? I mean, everybody wants to come to Paradigm Symposium because they get to meet the Paradames.
We're going
to
hold interviews and tryouts for the Paradames. Because we can't just have any arm candy. We have to have the best arm candy.
We want to put together the Graylian ground team for Paradigm Symposium. And that's something that we're going to put out to the listeners. You know, leading up to this event, we might have tryouts. Okay, auditions for a Graylian ground team. If you think you can come to the Paradigm Symposium and you can actually lend something to this event, we'd like to hear from you. You can email us at info@graylianreport.com. And as of course, what kind of James Bond villains would we be without a gaggle of Paradames joining us as well? Yes, so there will be the Graylian ground team as well as the Paradames will be joining us. This is going to be an event to remember, and who knows, maybe we'll just set aside a private event within the Paradigm Symposium for Graylian Report listeners alone. That might be fun. Maybe we'll just get a gaggle of the Graylians all together in one place to celebrate 2012 and the paradigm shift, the coming intelligence explosion, all these kind of things. And, of course, around that time, there'll certainly be a new book from yours truly coming out that we'll be talking about. But since we're looking to the future, more about that later, let's come to the future. Let's come to predictions, okay? If I'd had the good sense to do it earlier, we would have gotten one of our favorite guests, Robert Cracknell, Britain's leading psychic detective, even though he lives in Cyprus now. We would have gotten Robert and maybe also our New York field correspondent and very gifted psychic medium, Anya Briggs. We should have gotten them both on the program, and we should have done a prediction show. You know, I think we should do an annual prediction show. That would be great. But here we have a very interesting, a very unique list of predictions that we're going to go over. The New York Times did something very unique recently, okay, where they set up a website where readers could contribute their own ideas of predictions for the future. They ask, what will our lives look like in the near and far future? Well, submit your prediction below. The best submissions will be edited by the Times and placed in the main timeline here, and many of these have appeared online. Here are a few of them. Now, the convention that they use is they will say in the year, and then they'll have a year, and then you'll have the prediction, and then you will have the individual's name who submitted the prediction. Okay? Here are those predictions. We're just going to read a few of them. Some of these are incredible, and we'll get feedback about each of these. We'll talk
weird,
about
weird, wild stuff.
Weird, wild stuff. Wow, we haven't gotten to the weird, wild stuff yet. We're about to, though.
Yeah.
Okay. In the year 2020, you know, I almost feel like we should have, the theme music from 2001, you know, playing?
No, we need to have that song, the in the year 2525.
That's right. Well, this is the year 2020. In the year 2020, Google will provide everyone with the ability to communicate with everyone else regardless of the specific language they speak via their smartphone with real-time language translation. Real-time language translation. Well, that would be wild. Imagine if you had a friend that you met online who was from France, and you don't parlez-vous français. Okay. Well, you get on a smartphone, and Google Translate smartphone technology would allow individuals to communicate, and you would be able to have a conversation with that individual, and they would sound like a roboid. Hello, Micah. Thank you for calling me. I would like to tell you something interesting about your culture. You can't. Cindy, I thought, oh, that's the Google Translate. You don't really sound like that. She looks so good in the picture. Hello, Micah. Thank you for talking to me tonight.
Well, Apple actually already has the precursor to that.
Oh, do they?
Yes, there's an app you can get. They actually had a commercial about it. But basically, you know, you put in whatever language, you speak into your phone. I think it's for the iPhones that have the Siri. You speak into your phone, and then you hold it up to someone, and it translates what you said into whatever your chosen language is.
I still have visions of, like, you know, baby, I saw you online. You look fine. Now, I want to talk dirty to you, and I want you to talk dirty to me.
I think you are very hot. Thank you for talking to me on Facebook. Let's get to know better one another each.
And half of it's, like, illegible, you know. What? Talk dirty to me now.
Baby, you look so hot. I think you would look fine. I'm going to come to the United States and have my way with you.
Just so all of our listeners know,
that sounds
know,
more
this
like Indrid Cold than anything.
Chapstick. Chapstick? What? Are my lips pink or something? I mean, what?
Chapstick.
What? What am I holding in my hand right now?
Pervert.
What?
This is some of that, you know, finest content on the web that we talk about constantly.
That's right. To hell with SOPA and PIPA. You know what? We are proud to be providing you the kind of speculative trash that we... not my words. These are the listeners. Well, no. Actually, it's the people who don't listen that call it speculative trash. The listeners know better, don't they? But that said, moving right along. In the year 2030, self-driving cars will become relatively common. Due to effective technology coupled with demand from older citizens. Now, you know, actually, I don't think I've got it handy here, but the cover of this month's edition of Wired Magazine is what?
A robot hand.
Yeah, but what's it talking about? It's talking about cars that drive themselves.
Yes.
Yeah, I was reading about that earlier today as well.
Apparently, so, like in Soviet Russia, cars will now drive you.
Who was it who put it out? The most recent one's BMW, I think, and they were actually testing them on the Autobahn recently.
Wow. You know, real quick, I'm sorry. Let me just put something out there. Can we talk about, when we're talking about predictions, okay? Something, one of the predictions that came up here, and I don't mean to derail the conversation because I want to come back to this, but I just had something pretty remarkable happen. One of the predictions that people make here is that technology will essentially allow people to become telepathic. It will allow functional psi, and essentially what I call cybernetics, but not, you know, CYB, PSY, like psychic cybernetics. That's what I call this, okay? Now, I had a really strange thing happen recently where I was thinking, when I was a child, I'll tell you a story. When I was a child, I used to play around my father's church, and there were two gravestones behind the church, but they were not the graves of individuals who were deceased. These two individuals were alive, but they, for some reason, had their gravestones made in advance, you know, maybe anticipating health problems or something like that. Well, anyway, I hadn't thought about this in years. And then 2 days ago, I was lying down, and the two gravestones, the images of the gravestones came to mind for some reason. And I was thinking about those, and I was like, God, that's funny. I haven't thought about those in years. Okay, well, one of the names of the individuals on the gravestone, I hadn't thought of this person in years, but my father and mother dropped by my house yesterday for brunch. And mom and dad came in and everything. We were talking, and my dad walks into my living room, and he says, "You're not going to believe." And he says, "Such and such just died." It was the name of the man whose name was on the tombstone that I had been thinking about the day beforehand. I don't know why, in years and years and years, that name would have come to mind, just all of a sudden out of the blue. And then the next day I found out that the individual whose name was on that tombstone had just passed away. And I felt like asking, you know, can you tell me what time he died? But I'll bet you that it had to have been the day before, and for all we know, maybe even sometime close to when I had this, what you might call a premonition. Now, the reason I say that is because I got a phone call from a friend of mine last night who actually happens to be two-time national champion banjo player Charles Wood, who has appeared on the David Letterman program and the Prairie Home Companion, and a number of other famous programs. He's a champion banjo player. Well, Charles, he called me late last night, and I said, Charles, what's up? And he says, well, I need advice. And he said, Memorial Day weekend, I've been offered a show to play with another band. It pays fairly well, but I wonder if I should keep that date open. Because he said, I'm hoping that our band, which is called Nitrograss, might be able to get a date that weekend. And I said, well, you know, Charles, if you get offered some money, it's not going to hurt my feelings. Go do, you know, whatever comes your way. And he says, well, I don't know. I just feel like maybe I should keep that date open. Now, Charles, he's a good old guy. You know, he lives in Seneca, South Carolina. It's funny, you know, he doesn't really have a whole lot of interest in the paranormal. But one time we were in a bar together after a gig, and I asked him, Charles, do you believe in psychic abilities? And he says, actually, yeah, I do. And he says, I'll tell you this, every girl that I've ever ended up dating, I knew the first time I saw him that I would end up dating that girl. And he said, and I've felt that that always was some sort of a predictive ability that I have, okay? I just got an email from Charles, and that's what brought this to mind. He says, Micah, and we'd gotten an inquiry about a gig, a wedding performance in Greenville, South Carolina. And Charles responded to the inquiry. He says, by the way, that was the date I asked you about yesterday, wondering if I should keep it open or not. I had a feeling something else would come in. Charles, very interesting. And the way that this relates to our present conversation, future technology, is that I think sometimes that if anything, future technology very well may allow for functional psychic abilities. But now let's talk about something. Let's take this one step further, Chris, something we talked about earlier. You know, you and I were doing some investigation, some audio recordings at the infamous Reynolds Mansion, which we have broadcast from recently. And while we were having a conversation with Billy Sanders, the innkeeper there, about what ghosts could be, we were talking about how ghosts, rather than being literal spirits of the deceased, maybe ghosts are representative of a wrinkle in time, to borrow Madeline Ingalls' phrase from her famous novel. And if a wrinkle in time were to allow us an image of a past event so that we could see a ghost, Chris, you asked me a question and said, well, couldn't it go both ways? Remember, why don't you tell us, you could better elucidate what exactly you'd said.
Well, yeah, we had been mentioning that, you know, maybe ghostly apparitions aren't ghostly at all. They're just possibly, for lack of a better word, I guess, replays of events that mm-hmm. happened, just like energetic recordings that replay randomly in an area where they happened originally. And I thought, well, you know, if that happens, what's to say that, or what's not to say that, when we view those types of things, say it's a man in a top hat walking down the hall, mm-hmm. say when we see that, how can we not say that the man in the top hat walking down the hall isn't getting basically the mirror image of that in, you know, in his present? He's seeing a bunch of guys just kind of gawking at him with this weird stuff hanging from him, and that's, you know, kind of maybe where visions come from. And also, wouldn't that be like a fundamental, at its basis level, form of time travel?
In other words, if we see a ghost, that a ghost, you know, I think in paranormal speak, they refer to these things as repeaters. You know, you go into a room and you see a repeating, you know, occurrence from the past playing out as though you're watching a movie. But if there were any interactive elements to that, see, a lot of people would say, well, see, the past has already happened. The future hasn't happened at all, and therefore, you know, it can't go both ways. But I think that really when we think about things in a physical sense, the pliability of what we call time should be taken into consideration here. Time dilation, experiments with time dilation, already show that time is not what we really perceive it to be, and that it is pliable, and that it is something that can be changed, and that the notion of there being a past, present, and future may not be quite what it seems. Indeed, much like space just exists, okay, and wherever a distant point elsewhere may be, it is nonetheless there, and it is also something that you could potentially travel to. Maybe much the same, it is the case where, you know, time also exists, kind of, if we were to liken it to being space, time may be something that just exists, and even though what we perceive as a future that has not happened, okay, and that future, you know, again, is a perceptual kind of illusion of something that we cannot achieve and that we cannot interact with because it hasn't, according to our own chronological perspective of the passage of what we call time, it hasn't happened yet. Maybe that's not to say that indeed a future doesn't already exist, which kind of brings into mind, you know, questions of predetermination and things like that that are very troublesome for people, especially in ethically and religious contexts. But the thing is that whatever the case may be, if we were to perhaps see a wrinkle in time that would allow a vision of something from the past, could we equally, or could it be supposed, I guess, with equal precision that a person from the past might behold some element from the future when that kind of a thing happens? Could we see rents in space-time that allow for a time slip that could go both ways, and we could actually see images from the future? I mean, for all we know, something like, and this was interesting, this came up with a conversation I had recently with Dr. Maxim Kammerer, you know, who we've had on the program before. What if something like what abductees, alien abductees, describe as missing time is actually the effect of time dilation, in a sense? And what if the actual vision of a UFO, the observation of what appears to be an advanced aircraft or intelligence from another, you know, from another world, what if that is literally the same thing, okay, as you or I walking into a haunted house and seeing a replaying of a past event? What if we're seeing a future event occurring by virtue of some strange quantum wrinkle in time? So that's kind of the idea that Chris was you know, putting out there and playing with this earlier notion that we'd had. So, in other words, when we have a synchronistic or psychic vision, you know, what if in some way that actually plays into the nature of space and time? And furthermore, what if future technology allows a functional sort of psychic ability where we can do those kind of things through the use of technology? Who knows? So that brought to mind, and I thought that was very interesting, you know, and again, you know, rather cryptically, my good buddy Charles kind of put it as, I had a feeling that we should keep that date open because something else would come in. We just didn't know that maybe that would potentially happen the next day. And it's so funny because I can't name one time that Charles Wood has ever called me and said, I need your advice. Do you think I should do something on that date or should we keep it open? He's never asked me, but the one time he did, boom, look at that. Interesting. Who knows, maybe we're getting reflections from the future just as well. But continuing our reflections from the future, this list that the New York Times put together is pretty interesting. Some of these things that people are sending in are remarkable. We've already touched on self-driving cars. We've talked about Google providing everyone with the ability to communicate, you know. But here's some other interesting things. In the year 2100, someone says the singularity arrives. Well, according to transhumanist and futurist scientist Ray Kurzweil, it'll happen much sooner, probably closer to 2029. In the year 2025, online interactive-based attendance will surpass on-campus enrollment in colleges and universities globally. I think we're trending toward that right now. By the year 2014, robotic spying by law enforcement, foreign governments, corporations, and terror groups will become prevalent. In the year 2013, you will be able to search for the internet by uploading a picture of what you're trying to find. I think there are sites that also allow, you know, various kind of forms of similar technology already. One person writes, by 2025, we'll be laughing at all these predictions. In the year 2018, according to Tom Getson, wireless pads will be used for most news and communication, even in Africa and developing countries, before being replaced later by some virtual or miniaturized version. I've often said that the growth of technology itself is kind of, you know, a trend toward miniaturization of everything. Let's see here. Sean from Austin, Texas writes, in the year 2040, biological integration with computers such that small computing devices can be installed into a living organism and interact with the organism and a network will arrive. Such technology could be used to provide feedback on vitamin and mineral deficiencies or surpluses, chemical imbalances, and other sorts of things, and automatically order that prescription for you from a pharmacy. Imagine that. By the year 2019, get this one, Matt. I think this one will be of a certain importance to you.
What are we talking about?
What are we talking about, huh? Where am I here? Last print. Do I have to throw a pin at you?
No, it's okay. Really, I was listening.
I know. Last print newspaper run over 1,000 copies A. Einstein from New Mexico writes about the year 2019. But, you know, they're already talking about...
No more newspapers?
The end of newspapers. So, I mean, how long...
That's
until,
depressing.
You know, yeah, I don't do it a lot. I get more of my news off of, you know, the internet. But I still, every now and then, like to buy an actual newspaper and sit there and read it. You know, just like I like reading a book.
Exactly.
You know, and e-readers are wonderful, and they're, you know, already to a point where technologically they're not
Did you just say e-readers are wonderful?
I said e-readers are wonderful and that they're convenient, but I mean, what I'm getting around to is that I still like having a physical book, you know. I like having a book that I can sit there and that I can read.
And, you know, I rail against e-readers, and then people say that I just want to, you know, destroy trees because it takes paper to make a book. Well, joke's on you, Spuds McKenzie, because I buy used books. I don't buy new books, so I'm not contributing to the trees being cut down. They've already done been cut down.
They've done been cut down. He's talking like Papaw here. More from Papaw when we come back right after this. But really, when we do come back, we're a little bit late on this break, so he's like, you're not really going out to break like that. Oh, God.
Come on, just keep it for 4 minutes, all right?
More future predictions when we come back right after this.
Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. This is the third and... We're not in the third hour, actually. I guess it's just the second hour. Wait, hold on. John Anderson was going to come in. That's okay. You know what? We're kind of short. We're just going to... Literally, I think we've got 1 minute during this hour, so we're going to cut it off.
Two.
Do we have two? John's really mad at me now. He's like scowling because we had to cut him off. Yeah, right. I wonder what John's up to, actually. You know, I probably haven't talked to John since he cut those drops for us. But the Voice of the Mountains... You'll be hearing more from him during the third and final hour of this program. The third hour tends to be the most popular for this program, and I'll tell you why, because a lot of our listeners on the West Coast, keeping in mind they're 3 hours behind us, you know, 10 o'clock is 987 for them, so they're getting home. They're, you know, some people are just finishing dinner, and, you know, they don't get a chance to even tune in. Maybe we should do 4 hours. I don't know.
Remember what I said, guys? You remember what I said. Audience, you remember what I said. 24-hour Graylianathon. Parathon. Yeah.
That's right.
A 24-hour parathon. There's nothing you can't change para to make it better.
Para is awesome.
Parathon, paradame, paradigm. I mean, come on.
Here we are.
Come on.
You know, continuing this, again, looking at these predictions that people have written in with the future, I love some of these things. Get this, okay? In the year 2025... Computing devices will become completely recyclable and their power efficiency will become very high. We will find energy sources that are cleaner and safer than fossil fuel. In the year 2030, we'll have designer babies, genetically engineered human super hybrid monkey models.
Whoa.
I added monkey, don't worry.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Because I'm still looking for that prehensile tail, and if I can't have it, my son should be able
to. You're going
to
be a little
I
want to
give
Saiyan.
Him things I could never have.
Oh, my gosh. Let's see here. 2014, virtual keyboards will be projected from smartphones and tablets. I saw a TED presentation that was already very similar.
They already are.
Yeah.
It's just a little thing. It's a USB Bluetooth thing. It projects a little red light keyboard on the flat surface, and you tippy-tap, and it works.
Yeah, and for all the Tesla fiends out there, the people who are proponents of Tesla technology, by the year 2015, wireless electricity will be the norm. 2018, electronic textbooks will appear in American schools, and by 2043, artificial intelligence will become a decisive factor in war. We'll have this link to the show notes for this week's edition of the program. This is truly fascinating, and we'll discuss this and much more on the other side of this break. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out and keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Havkin.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And we're back for this week's edition of the Graylian Report, finishing things up this third and final hour. Oh, man. Having more fun than people wearing clothes should ever be allowed to have. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, joined in the studio by that guy, the guy who's interrupting me over
who's
here.
Who's wearing clothes?
That's right. We're going au naturel, like
we
the Hadles do.
We always broadcast.
Why in the hell
book.
Is it always so hot down here?
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Matt, that's all you, buddy. Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. I wish you could see the man. That should be another New Year's resolution. You know, we're like, it's like we finally got around to our New Year's resolutions. And that's another one of them. It's like, get the webcam up. Why isn't the webcam up? I think we've actually got one here somewhere. We just need to...
We'll have to put on clothes if we start doing
yeah,
the
that's right. Yeah, they don't broadcast live because they're not wearing clothes. Those creeps. They're those guys who sit there naked. Oh, no. You know, here's the deal. I have a friend who was talking about some natural nude awareness day or something like that. And they were talking about a friend of theirs. And the guy had posted on this friend of mine's Facebook page. And she said something along the lines of, yeah, right, you're already not wearing clothes. I don't know. Sorry. Thought that was really funny. No, actually, the funny thing is we're actually dressed really nice right now because, you know, Chris and I, as usual, usually the day of the show, we're out handling business around town.
Business.
You know what I mean? Business. That's right. Well, you know, we're doing a lot of research, not only at Reynolds Mansion. We're also getting things. We had a full regimen today. You know, we were networking and talking with Scotty Roberts. We had a brunch meeting about Paradigm Symposium. We've got so much stuff going on. You know, we met up with our engineer here at about, well, it was supposed to be 5:30, but it ended up being a little bit later. Traffic was bad. The Graylian Mobile got us there as quickly as she could. Jarvet was a real trucker there. Jarvet, yes, the in-vehicle navigation system of the future, which only a few of us today have managed to have, but people always think I'm joking, and then they get in my car, and the first thing they hear is, say a command, or transfer complete, you know, this little voice.
I swear to God, if I hear transfer complete one more time.
Yeah, I know, I'm like, honey, please, you don't have to interrupt the song to tell me
that.
And
it's always like, you know, half an hour into the trip, it takes that long for the Bluetooth to sync with the car, and the song will just stop, and I'll be like, transfer complete.
Thank you, Jarvet, thank you so much. It's like, you know, you were getting... And apparently, a four-car pileup, the names of the individuals have been involved who robbed the bank.
Transfer complete.
Yeah, that's how it always goes. Jarvet! Now listen here, babe! No.
And yes, RPJ, that's why you need to turn down your speakers when you get onto the Graylian Report.
Hey, at least this is live and we're not swearing anymore like it used to be when we weren't live.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why it took us like 10 hours to record a 3-hour podcast because we just spent 7 of them cussing.
Screaming at the microphone.
Just continuously. Like, we didn't even have any real content during those 7 hours. It was just, you know.
It was entertaining for us. It was entertaining, but anyway, I'd like to think that this podcast is entertaining for all of you out there listening as a podcast, but we do broadcast live, you know, but the thing is that, you know, although we have a few people that listen live, the podcast listenership is tremendous, and that says one thing, that listening on demand really is the way of the future, 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 and we're discussing the future tonight. In fact, looking at our list of future things that are going to go on, by 2025, more than 50% of new cars are going to be 100% electric. Well, Jarvet will be happy about that. In 2016, the education system will rely on iPad-like devices in the classroom. Hyper-connected students will hardly remember what a pencil even is, except for when they have to ride on long bus rides and they use them for weapons.
Yeah, I don't get it. Why? I mean, it's cool that we've got all this technology, but if I had to spend half of my third grade year learning how to write in that damnable cursive, then future generations should have to do it too. Because it's more like a rite of passage than anything else.
You know how we were... By the way, that reminds me of something, Chris. You know how we were talking about, you know, education reform earlier tonight over dinner? Well, here's something else to think about. Why spend all that time teaching people cursive handwriting when the majority of the written work that occurs these days is typed on computers?
I know.
You know? I mean, and teach people how to write, and the whole purpose of cursive, I think, is to try and teach people how to write things more quickly, but... You know, I mean, truly, I think that if anything, they should probably spend less time on elegant and really sweet-looking, curvy little, you know, handwriting
styles.
Yeah,
I mean, at least teach them how to type actual words instead of the letter U and LOL and all that horribly infuriating internet speak that,
this is why
that
I
have
text.
Literally lost friends over because I don't tolerate it. I don't.
So, Matt, you don't text because of this?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest reasons I don't text.
This guy sent a text message to our producer earlier today, though.
He did.
I saw that.
He Yahoo messaged me from his work computer. Apparently, you can Yahoo message to people's phones now. So every once in a while,
I'll get
a text from huge long number, nothing sacred 88, colon, hey, dude, what's up?
But you know, but no, the real reason for that is because cell phone reception is so bad down here in the bunker. And when he was down here in the studio earlier today, when he sends a message, reception was bad. So you have to use what's available to you. So the guy's actually, he's getting hip to tech.
You got to give me credit though, Chris. I really know how to turn a phrase, huh?
I guess so, yeah. He can do something like that. If you got friends who are not listening to the Graylian Report yet, we implore you, please do them a favor and tell them how they can turn in for the night. No, tell them how they can tune in. There's a big difference. Tell them how they can tune into this program. It's quite simple. Of course, the easiest way that we can direct people to this website is just visit www.graylianreport.com and click Graylian Report on the radio at the top right-hand corner of the page. That'll take you to all the information that you need to know about how to listen live and also how to call in. You know, we have a live call-in number that you can utilize, as well as we'll take Skype calls. We can even receive text messages from you, as well as good old-fashioned emails. But what about communication in the future? You know, what's gonna allow for new kinds of communication? You know, one of these predictions that was included in this piece at the New York Times was that after their first detection in 2011, this has to do with the CERN experiments with the neutrinos, faster-than-light particles have been harnessed and amplified to provide the first faster-than-light mode of transportation, which makes interstellar travel possible for the first time. New robotic probes are set to search the galaxy for the eventual transport of sentient beings.
And this is exactly why we need Joshua Buckner, physicist extraordinaire, to call in and refute the neutrino faster-than-the-speed-of-light thing, because he explained it to me the other day in really simple terms, and it made so much sense, but I can't repeat it because I don't really remember it verbatim.
Well, that's why you have to rely on a physics correspondent. Well, producer, why didn't you just line him up and decide, you know, have him on the, see if you can get him on the program.
You know, I tried to, but there was a snafu and he couldn't come. But I told him to call in to the show. I know you're listening.
Oh, so he's listening in and still didn't. That's how it goes.
And, you know, enlighten us on why neutrinos don't, in fact, travel faster than light.
You know, neutrinos do tend to behave very strangely. But, you know, before I would say that these, you know, or any kind of particle might be utilized in transportation faster than the speed of light, I would say that, if anything, there might be applications that would lend themselves to communication and communication systems. Perhaps something like that would work a little better. At least in the short term, right? In the short term. And speaking of in the short term, here it is. It's 2012. One of these predictions was for 2029 being the infamous year that Ray Kurzweil and others predict a singularity. But anyway, in 2019, according to Brian Jackson of Madrid, Spain, virtual reality will pass the uncanny valley, becoming convincing in nearly all regards, allowing rich, immersive experiences from the comfort and safety of one's home. This will significantly reshape the media industry, be it concerning movies, gaming, or even, get this, pornography. And guess what, Chris? I think you may have gotten your wish, because while we're discussing all these things, you know, one of the interesting questions that many on their minds have is really, with regard to the CERN experiments, what does that have to do with the future? What can we actually hope to learn or ascertain from future sciences about that sort of thing? And I believe right now joining us by phone is none other than your physics friend, Mr. Joshua Buckner. Josh, are you with us?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm here.
I'm so glad that you were able to call into the program tonight, because it appears that, according to our producer, you are just the man to answer the question of the hour, which I'm going to have our producer actually ask about right now. Go ahead, Chris.
So, Joshua, if you could explain to our audience just exactly why it is that neutrinos don't, in fact, travel faster than light.
Well, there was a problem in the setup of their experiment. They assumed that the distance between the first detector and the second detector is not a straight line. It uses the curvature of the Earth as the distance in between it. Well, the thing about a neutrino is that it will travel through the Earth. So between the detectors, it travels in a completely straight line. So when you do the mathematics for it, it comes out that it's slightly faster than the speed of light, traveling a shorter distance than it's been given. And that's pretty much it. It just cuts a corner.
Stupid physicist.
Stupid physicist. Listen to him. Well, you know, but and the thing is that there are these, you know, this is one perspective that's been put forth. So there are a lot of people, I think probably more people, that are skeptical about what's actually going on here than there are people who are proponents of the theory. Josh, do you think that there's any potential ever that we will achieve, you know, or that we will at very least maybe before 2029 observe some sort of a particle mass or anything along those lines that is indeed moving faster than light speed?
I tend to stick with Einstein on this one. There is no faster than light. However, space is moldable, and I believe that given the right circumstances, the right technological advancements, that we may be able to feed off of that somehow, to manipulate that, to give us something that is faster than the speed of light. As far as time goes, time experience goes, you may travel farther of a distance, but it's because that distance has been squeezed together because space is foldable. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you can take a rocket and travel faster than the speed of light. Or even in the communication realm, other than once you started getting into the quantum effects, but those are if you can explain those, you've got one heck of a degree.
You know, by the way, Josh, I just got to say, Chris has got a photograph of you pulled up on the web here. You know, what we should do is, you know, we should actually have you listed as one of our science advisors on the program, because you do, you know, consult with us often. And actually, you know, you do have an academic background in the study of physics. Is it okay for me to actually say that here on the air?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a strong academic background. Don't get me wrong, but it's an academic background.
Yes, you are.
Approach.
Yeah, you're not just
the physics, you know.
Indeed, and I think this picture that Chris has got pulled up here, that should be on the website accompanying his it's like
Josh, it's the picture of you hunting either tigers or wolverines.
No, Josh, Josh, in this picture, you have an uncanny likeness to Kurt Russell in the 1980s John Carpenter the Thing.
God, he does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're like one step away from Jack Burton.
He says, wait, y'all, that's actually what you were going for, you said?
Well, you know, like, I was thinking about it, and I think I'd watched that movie maybe 2 days before, and yeah. I'm like, you know, this is a good idea.
I think it was a very good idea.
R.J. McCready here.
Here's what old Jack Burton has to say about a different character I know. But, I got to throw in a Big Trouble in Little China reference. Well, you know, Josh, while we got you on the phone, and since we're talking about predictions for the future, let's say something between now and the year 2050. What is a significant technological advancement that you predict will occur in the next, you know, 45 years or so?
Well, I believe the biggest one is going to be quantum computing. We're on the verge of it right now, and it'll be the next stage in computers. It'll allow us to do on a laptop what supercomputers do today. And I believe that will be the biggest technological advancement, or at least technological refinement. It'll allow us to the ability at which we can process information will increase so much that science will be able to advance alongside of it, just as it has with computer technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to say that that's the biggest solid bet technological advancement, day-to-day quantum computers. But, I mean, it's still a ways off. You never can tell. Where's my flying car, for instance?
Right. And that's what so many people keep saying. It's like, we thought by now. I mean, look at Arthur C. Clarke. You know, who back in the 1960s was pretty sure that we were going to be, you know, engaging in manned missions to planets like Jupiter and perhaps beyond the infinite. Well, we aren't quite there yet, unless you prescribe to, you know, some of those conspiracy theories and things like that. But who knows what the case may actually be. And many would even say that at the greater than exponential rate of growth of technology, that these sorts of things like what you're talking about, quantum computing, you know, non-invasive mapping of, you know, not only the human brain, but also, you know, the human, you know, genome, and of course, you know, the DNA, which is the biological blueprint, so to speak, of the human species. And then, of course, you know, taking it to the next level, then utilizing these kind of technologies to create greater than human intelligence, which is technological in origin, but which eventually will surpass on a sentient level our own intelligence. So many people say that this kind of thing will actually happen much sooner than many expect it, because technology is growing at a rate greater than merely exponential. And if that's the case, this stuff could be right around the corner, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And you got to think, if we're using conventional technologies or technologies that are conventional to us, and improving ourselves, you know, computer implants in our brain or, you know, whatever is cooked up under that imagining, that the computers that we carry around with us would have to be much faster. You know, technologies play off of each other, and that's what they've done through history. Mm-hmm. And they're going to keep doing that. Faster computers, better designed cars, better designed materials, better designed everything. And it's kind of going to be the same way. If you can make calculations that would normally require a, you know, a graphing calculator or something like that in your head, then what's the use of a graphing calculator, you know? Mm-hmm. Calculus can be learned at age 6, and, well, you're going to have a bigger external computer for that, and I think that's a possible direction that that may take.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all speculation. It's hopes and it's dreams, and they're good to have. And they're good to keep an open mind about. And with current technology, I think that those things are very possible.
I agree with you, and I was hoping, Josh, that you wouldn't say that speculation is just pure crap, like so many in the intelligentsia would have us say. You know, I was lamenting an email I got from one of these members of the scientific establishment this week when I very, very, you know, carefully approached the subject of singularity, for instance, in with regard to the potential for the existence of alien life or even UFOs, which may or may not have anything to do with extraterrestrials. And I was told that they would, that this scientific individual would not engage in any kind of speculative discussion about such silly matters for which there was no, absolutely no evidence. So, anyway.
Hey, it's not like we're talking about fairies over here.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I believe even in the scientific community that speculation is brought forth. You need to discuss these things. They need to be discussed and thought about and looked forward to some degree. Even Einstein's theory of relativity and general relativity and all that was speculation. And when he presented it, that's not what he got his first story. He got that for Brownian motion. And it was just speculation. There was no proof for it. Well, there was some proof, but they were obscure at the time. But that speculation, you know, without speculation, we would have never tried to go across the ocean and see if there was anything else there.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Absolutely.
And that's how mankind works. Mankind works on some forms of speculation. We have to speculate, and then we have to go try it. And it's experiment, error, and theory. Even without evidence, the probability that we're the only sentient life form in the universe is actually really small. So even though we may not have no physical proof or anything else like that of UFOs, it doesn't mean that they're not out there. Mm-hmm. And to say otherwise would just not be scientific.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Josh, I tell you, you know what? The clock's caught us. We've got to go to a break. Thank you so much for calling in. And, you know, at some point in the future, maybe we can do an entire program that's kind of based around this sort of thing. Maybe even get you live in studio to join us. That would be fantastic.
Well, you'll have to talk to the Highway Patrol about that.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Gray Lane Report.
All right. You're welcome.
Yeah, you take
care.
You guys
have a good night.
We'll talk soon. Don't worry, my friend. I can guarantee you that. That was Josh Buckner. He is a science advisor to the program, and, of course, sharing his thoughts, which I'm thrilled to hear, are fairly open-minded about the potentials for future technology and not merely trash because they involve speculation. But everybody knows that speculation is nothing but garbage! Garbage day! Oh, gosh. Anyway, I think we're having way too much fun tonight on the program. If you've got thoughts you'd like to share, you can also reach us here on the program, 828-398-4886. We'd love to hear from you here on the Gray Lane Report right after this.
Are you facing foreclosure? Then come down to Megalo and Partners. We're a mortgage rescue company, and we can help you keep your house. Provided you submit to our plans for galactic domination.
No, no, I'm kidding.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
The Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Where you're hope for reason in an unreasonable world. Welcome back to the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio, as always, by producer Chris Hayes and engineer Matt, the Reverend Kind-Eyed Oakley. And we are bringing you beyond the fringes of insight tonight as we discuss the future, the world of the future. But we've been talking about that an awful lot, and we even had our fantastic, one of our correspondents, Mr. Joshua Buckner, call in with his insights about future technology as well. You know, something else that I had hoped to get to a little bit tonight was this story about galaxy colonization. Wait a minute. Did I misread that, Chris? Is it galaxy colonization?
I certainly hope not.
Galaxy.
Because we're in for a world of stuff if it's galaxy colonization.
Galaxy. No, I read it right. Colonization. Galaxy colonization. Okay.
Who's Colin, though?
Who's this Colin guy? Anyway, the story. Where is that story? Do you have that story? Galaxy colonization?
Somewhere.
Yeah, you should find it. Under the, right now, you're looking at something else over there.
I'm looking at our Graylian Facebook page, which I'm moderating because we've got such a huge influx of people talking.
I'm so proud of you. That's so good.
About us.
Should I pull up the galaxy colonization story? Matt, why don't you pull it up? Why don't you guys carry it? Producer! Produce something.
Well, I'll produce something, all right.
He's producing something. Are you gonna get that story for us?
Oh, no. What's yes, wrong? But no. Oh, damn it.
Well, it looks like we're going right along.
No, it's fine.
Living cyborgs are coming. This one comes courtesy of Anya Briggs, our New York field correspondent, who sent this one. The Mail Online had commented earlier this week about, this is a remarkable story, faulty parts of living brains have been replaced by electronic chips in an astonishing and controversial scientific breakthrough. It's a move that has been anticipated many times in science fiction with creatures such as the Terminator, a cyborg hybrid of flesh and machinery. But now researchers at Tel Aviv University have successfully created circuits that can replace motor functions, such as blinking, and implanted them into human brains. They hope that the technology could in the future help people suffering from brain malfunctions such as Parkinson's disease by replacing damaged or malfunctioning tissue with chips that perform the same function. Imagine there's a small area in the brain that is malfunctioning, and that imagine that we understand that the architecture of this damaged area might be, said Professor Maddie Mintz, a psychobiologist, speaking to the BBC. So we try to replicate this part of the brain with electronics. Now, Mintz has already successfully implanted a robotic cerebellum into the skull of a rodent with brain damage, restoring its capacity for movement. What they hope, of course, is in the future that this sort of technology will be utilized in such a way that it will allow people who have brain damage perhaps to regain motor control and things like that, which reminds me of something else that's pretty interesting.
You know, Stephen Hawking, of course, has, and we talked about this already on the program, he has outlived expectations. Stephen Hawking has, for decades, I think that the initial projection was that he would only live a few years, okay, when he was diagnosed with the debilitating disease which has left him in the present state where he is now. And Hawking has nonetheless persisted and managed to remain really kind of at the forefront of physics and study of cosmology and, you know, intellectual pursuit of questions such as whether or not there's alien life, whether there's merit or maybe even potentially danger to involving ourselves in such things as attempts at communication with extraterrestrial intelligence. You know, SETI, for instance. Or actually, SETI, rather than, you know, just gathering intelligence from the cosmos, potentially, like SETI would do, METI would involve the actual broadcasting of those kinds of messages out into space. Well, that said, Stephen Hawking, nonetheless, because of the nature of his disease, it's becoming more and more difficult for Hawking to communicate utilizing these, the system that grants him the ability to, again, quote-unquote, speak. And even though there's a greater technological ability to, for instance, upgrade the sound of the voice that Stephen has, the voice of the actual computer that, you know, aids his ability to speak, this is very interesting. I read an article this week that said that despite the fact that they could change the voice and make it sound more human, they don't do that because that voice is so well associated with Stephen Hawking. You know, the, hello, I am Stephen Hawking. That voice is so, no, listen, it is so well associated with the physicist that they say that is Stephen's voice, and no matter how they update the technology, they are sure to always integrate that same voice structure, okay, into the new technology, because that is Stephen Hawking's voice now. But the problem is that it's becoming more and more difficult, because now, at this point, Hawking can essentially only do one thing. He can only control certain muscles in his face. Okay? He can look around and he can control certain muscles on his face. That's about all he can do. So it has become incredibly difficult for him to utilize even new systems designed that should continue to allow him to communicate. And now they say that it's gotten to a point where, unfortunately, his ability to communicate has been reduced to about one word per minute. Now, imagine how remarkably frustrating that would have to be if you are arguably one of the greatest minds in science, you know, of the last century, and you're not able to articulate your ideas to individuals around you any more quickly than one word per minute. You know, if we were to try and demonstrate what one word per minute surrounded by silence would sound like for the next, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, well, it would trip our off-air sensors, and then we'd start hearing, you know, sirens and things blasting in the background that were intended to alert our engineers that we were off the air. So the thing is that, by the way, have you got that story?
I do.
Okay. Yes, okay. I do. I got you. I'm sorry. Yeah, I saw you gesturing there, so don't let me continue talking. But the point is that I saw this. This is very interesting. That, you know, if Stephen Hawking is intellectually still 100%, but he's not able to communicate any more quickly because of the limitations of technology, he's not able to communicate more quickly than one word per minute. Can you imagine the profound frustration that that must entail? But they also note that he's also very stubborn, and that interestingly, when people come in and try and start showing him new technology, they say that all of a sudden he starts getting better and able to, you know, do several words per minute with the existing technology. So that there's a certain part of it may have to do with attitude and his own, you know, attitude toward the existing technology versus his stubbornness in terms of, you know, adopting something new. And they say that indeed there is a problem concerning the learning curve, and that the potential for him to learn how to utilize a new technology with his own limitations makes it more difficult to even introduce new technology that would perhaps allow him to be able to speak more quickly. Imagine how difficult it would be for you to learn to utilize a new kind of technology when all you could do was move, you know, your facial muscles and maybe blink your eyes or look around the room.
I mean, the singularity needs to happen. I mean, if...
Well, if for Steve, him, it does.
If Stephen Hawking has you know, defied the odds like we talked about our last show, or the show before, I forget which one, where he's lived about 50 years longer than he's supposed to with the disease he's got, if he can just stick it out for like 20 more years, we'll have the singularity, he'll have his implant. Who knows? He could be dancing, not just speaking.
Wouldn't that be remarkable? And you know what would be really interesting is I wonder what his voice would sound like if technological advancement allowed him to literally regain his you know motor control and motor skills in his body, and he was able to, obviously there are aspects of his physical body that have atrophied to the point that he would have to actually probably go through extensive rehabilitation. But wouldn't it be interesting to hear his actual voice? Because unless I'm mistaken, Hawking's actually a an English
physicist. There are actually filmed lectures of Stephen Hawking from before he became immobilized and lost his voice and all of that.
He was British, wasn't he? Well, I've seen some of those.
He still is British.
Well, yes, obviously. But the thing is that you know, he had a British accent. And the thing is I think the lectures that you mentioned, it's so difficult to, you know, he was having difficulty speaking at that point in the videos, if we're thinking of the same videos. So, you know, it's a remarkable situation with him. You know, he really kind of is a symbol of hope for many, Stephen Hawking, because despite the onset, what is the actual name a motor neuron disease, but there's a specific name for it. I'm trying to find the name of the actual condition. But that said, you know, he's really remained over the years an inspiration of people, not only because of the way that he's able to, you know, have continued on, but also the way that he's been able to utilize technology in such a way that he could continue to be a driving force in the fields of physics and cosmology, despite his remarkable, I mean, truly, truly remarkable, awesome handicaps. It's pretty incredible. So yes, for someone like Stephen Hawking, yes, I think that it would be a dire necessity for there to be a singularity. Which, you know, again, if you actually go to the website, singinst.com. That sing is in singing a song, INST, inst, which stands for Singularity Institute. Okay, singinst.org. You know, not only did they talk about the idea of artificial intelligence and singularity, but there are also a lot of arguments for why working toward a singularity would be helpful, and additionally, how, you know, a future where artificial intelligence might exist could also improve our way of life. Think about this one. When we have, and this is something that scares a lot of people, but when a greater than human intelligence exists as a result of artificial intelligence here on planet Earth, what we are faced with is not only something that is potentially smarter than humans, but something that is potentially able to solve problems more quickly than humans do. And once we create an actual artificial intelligence, for all we know, there are incredible physics or other scientific problems, you know, in areas of science that have puzzled us for centuries or greater. And these kinds of things could be solved very quickly by an intelligence that is able to wrap its processing abilities more quickly and in innovative ways around these kinds of issues in an effort to solve them. So the potentials are far greater than I think a lot of people even consider when it comes to things like artificial intelligence and the future. But that said, I'm sorry, I wanted to move to another subject, and what that was this news story that you'd found, Chris. We've got that pulled up now about galactic colonization. I'm going to turn it over to you now at this point.
All right, this story comes from sentientdevelopments.com. It's a blog out in the blagosphere. The article is entitled, "New Mathematical Study Reveals That Our Galaxy Should Have Been Colonized by Now." And apparently a recent article in The Economist has alerted everyone, really, to a recent paper by Thomas Hare and Andrew Hedman that profoundly reaffirms the conundrum that is the Fermi paradox, an observational problem that is sometimes referred to as the Great Silence. What's fascinating about the Hare and Hedman paper is that they're neither cosmologists nor astrobiologists, but rather mathematicians. And it's through the lens of number crunching that they sought an answer to the question of how long it would take a civilization to colonize its local region, given a specific set of parameters. And their findings are, well, disturbing. No matter how they reworked the numbers, they came to the same conclusion. The galaxy should have been colonized by now.
By some sentient intelligence elsewhere in the cosmos.
Or us.
Or us. Huh, interesting.
Yeah, to arrive at their conclusion, Dr. Hare and Hedman assume that outer space is dotted with solar systems about 5 light-years apart. They then asked how quickly a single civilization, armed with the requisite technology, would spread its tentacles, depending on the degree of colonizing zeal, expressed as the probability that intelligent beings decide to hop from one planet to the next in 1,000 years. That would be 500 years for the trip, at a modest 1/10 of the speed of light, and another 500 years to prepare for the next hop. All these numbers are necessarily moot if the vast majority of planets are suitable. For instance, the average distance for a successful expedition might be much more than 5 light-years, and advanced beings might not need 5 Earth centuries to get up to speed before they redeploy. However, Dr. Hare and Mr. Hedman can tweak their probabilities to reflect a range of possibilities and conditions. Using what they believe to be a conservative assumptions, as low as 1 chance in, say, 4 of embarking on a colonization mission in 1,000 years, they calculated that any galactic empire would have spread outward from its home planet at about 0.25% the speed of light. The result is that after 50 light years, it would extend over 130,000 light years, which is really hard to wrap your brain around.
Yeah.
Good
thing we've got an artificial intelligence supercomputer here in the actual studio that can do this for us.
Holler.
And that it appears, you know, on our screen in the visage of course, none other than Captain Kirk.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Jarvette.
Well, Jarvette's in the vehicle, but we've got the creepy artificial intelligence Captain Kirk on our side here.
Well, anyway, with zealous colonizers moving in a relatively uniform cloud and more reticent ones protruding from a central blob, since the Milky Way is estimated to be about 100 to 120,000 light-years across, outposts would be sprinkled throughout the galaxy, even if the home planet were, like Earth, located on the periphery. And here comes the mind-blowing part. It's coming.
Blow our minds, Chris.
Oh, I'm going to blow your minds. Matt, I'll wait.
Do it!
Go ahead. Do it.
I'm sorry, Matt. Matt was interrupting me. I apologize.
Shut up.
Crucially, even in slow expansion scenarios, the protrusions eventually coalesce. After 250,000 light years, which the model has so far had time to simulate, the biggest gaps are no larger than 30 light years across. Dr. Hare thinks they should grow no bigger as his virtual colonization progresses. That's easily small enough for man's first sufficiently powerful radio transmissions in the early 20th century to have been detected and for a reply to have reached Earth, which has been actively listened to, has been listening out for since the early 60s.
Right, SETI, which brings us back to the discussion of the search for sentient intelligence elsewhere. But something else real quick, Chris, and I just want to interject here. See, that's one of the problems I've always had with Kurzweil's notion of singularities. He says that as we move out into the universe, okay, what is supposed to happen eventually is that the universe will begin to wake up as our own technology begins to awaken intelligence and sentience in other aspects of nature and reality. And we move out into the world, and of course the film Transcendent Man, of course, ends with the statement where Kurzweil is asked if he believes in a god or whether a god exists, and he says, well, maybe not yet. Talking about how, of course, in the future there will be some semblance of something like what we might liken to being a god after the universe wakes up. But now the thing is that if indeed other sentient intelligences were to go through a singularity and go through such in a way similar to that expected of humans in the coming decades, then the question I have obviously is, well, then why don't we see signs of that sort of thing already? Or is our nature and our notion of a creator as a sentient intelligence ourselves, our own ongoing interaction with aspects of existence that are the byproduct of some post-singularity intelligence that occurred long, long ago, perhaps in a galaxy far away. You know, it's a pretty interesting concept. And, you know, and but the thing is that if we aren't seeing signs of that sort of thing, first question I have would be this. If there are signs of it, would we recognize them for being such with our own technological limitations? If there are no signs of such a thing, then does that mean that A, Kurzweil and these guys are wrong, or B, that perhaps some intelligence elsewhere in the universe that would be the proponents of such a technological awakening throughout the universe, you know, and a colonization of sorts throughout the universe, would that in essence mean that that this had never happened, and that Kurzweil and people like that are correct in their assumptions, but that there's no technological race that has achieved this sort of technological proliferation throughout the universe as yet?
Well, you know, the rest of the article addresses that exact question.
Oh, it does. Good. Yes, well, you know does. What, though? We're going to have to come back to that, though, when we come back from this break. Yes, my friends, the clock has caught us. But now, Chris, we don't want you to steal the whole show. So when we come back, you know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to speak to our spiritual advisor. Don't say it. When we come back, you'll find out exactly what we're talking about. It is the Graylian Report. Tonight, we're discussing fringe science of the future. We're going to speak with our own artificial intelligent oracle about this very matter of singularity and the universe waking up right after this.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
What is it, Lieutenant?
Well, thank you, Kirkbot, for bringing us back. Yes, our electronic oracle, the Kirkbot. Yes, we have artificial intelligence right here in the bunker with us, and we're now speaking with, I don't know if you'd call him a special guest, he's kind of always here. It's our creepy, artificial intelligent Captain Kirk from the Starship Enterprise, who we heard from earlier in the program tonight as well. You know, I wonder what Captain Kirk thinks about technology from the future. But before we get to all that, I'm going to turn it back to Chris Hayes. Chris, you know, we're talking about the rationale for why the, as Kurzweil and others may have said, the universe wouldn't have woken up. What is the gist of this? And with regard to the story that you were sharing during the last segment, you know, what is the explanation proposed by those involved in this study regarding specifically why we haven't seen that kind of thing, or why we haven't seen sentient intelligence exploding throughout the universe, or have we?
Well, the basic gist of it is, you know, taking into account all these mathematical models that these two guys have come up with, it means one of two things. Either humans are, in fact, alone in the Milky Way, not to say that other galaxies don't have sentient life, but in the Milky Way alone, humans are, in fact, alone. Or our neighbors are fairly timid, which goes back to the Fermi paradox.
The infamous Fermi paradox, as my headphones continue to fall apart. Literally right here on the air. Well, you know, the Fermi paradox is interesting. And in essence, what we're talking about there is, you know, you mentioned already earlier what we refer to sometimes as the great silence. You know, there's a disturbing silence from the universe. We don't see any evidence whatsoever that there's anyone that appears to be in a way similar to you or I utilizing the natural functions of the universe, radio telecommunications or laser optics or something like that, to communicate.
Which is why every time we talk about this, we're just speculating and taking away from real science.
Why we're being, yes, exactly. We're you know, contributing to the garbage and the further, you know, what we might call the intellectual vandalism of the web and of, you know, the greater human body of knowledge through our unbridled skepticism. Oh, I'm sorry, I mean, did I say skepticism? Our unbridled speculation. Anyway, well, maybe we could ask the Kirk bot. Kirk, let's ask him, I would like to know, Kirk, well, first of all, let's say good morning and see how he's doing. Good morning, how are you? Hold on, I don't think I had his volume turned up there. Good morning, Captain Kirk, how are you?
Greetings, yes, Lieutenant.
Why does he keep calling us Lieutenant? I'm clearly a colonel.
Clearly a colonel. Explain, Captain Kirk, the Fermi... I have to type this, folks. Paradox. Can you do that for us, please? Captain Kirk? Let's see what his response is. He's thinking.
I can offer no explanation.
What does he think about the Prime Directive? He should know about the Prime Directive. He pretty much created it.
Let's ask him what he thinks about the Prime Directive. Now, that has nothing to do with the primes such as Optimus Prime, right?
No. If you knew anything about Star Trek, you'd know what the Prime
Primary
Directive
rule
is.
Or overriding objective.
Primary rule or overriding objective. Well, okay.
I mean, I could tell you what the Prime Directive is, but that's for another show. That's another show.
Well, you know, in the last couple of minutes that we've got tonight, there was one more thing I did want to touch on tonight. You know, for those people who have seen the film The Watchmen, you know, in the beginning, who exactly watches The Watchmen? That's the question. And in the opening segment, the opening sequence, rather, of that film, we see the infamous Doomsday Clock moving one closer to midnight. And, of course, when the Doomsday Clock, which is a symbolic representation of the danger of, you know, cataclysmic, you know, world destruction, you know, typically through nuclear, you know, weaponry and mutually assured self-destruction and all that wonderful, wholesome stuff, when we talk about this sort of thing, a lot of people don't realize that there is, you know, literally, I mean, an actual gauge that the scientific community utilizes for purposes of gauging how close we are to you know, potential self-destruction. Matt, you know, you've been looking at, you know, the recent news with regard to I almost said the atomic clock. With regard to the doom, is the proper terminology here the Doomsday Clock?
They do call it the Doomsday Clock, and as you said, it's a bunch of scientists and several Nobel Prize winners, as I understand it. And you know, they analyze world events and you know, current political situations, what have you, and base our distance to until midnight off of the world at large.
The goings on in the world. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, you. I insist.
Oh, please.
Well, I was just going to say that you know, now the clock has been moved closer to midnight. Now, where are we right now with the Doomsday Clock?
We currently stand as of the 10th, I believe, of this month at 5 minutes till midnight.
Okay, so we're not in literally into the lyrics of an Iron Maiden song yet at this point.
And as I went over with you earlier, you brought up 2 minutes till midnight, great metal song.
Uh-huh.
That is actually, we were at 2 minutes till midnight at one point in 1953 when both the United States and the Soviet Union tested thermonuclear devices within 9 months of each other.
Uh-huh. So a lot of people at that point thought, you know, really the end is very nigh. Matt, what does it mean right now for us that the doomsday clock is now 5 minutes to midnight? Are we in imminent danger? Is this a threat, or is this a symbolic representation, as many actually take it to be?
The way I, because I wrote an article on this earlier that I sent to you. I sent it to you.
And we will have that up at the Graylian Report very soon, yes.
You know, if you like it. But really, the doomsday clock being 5 minutes till midnight, the only thing I really talk about in the article in regards to that is we're back where we were in 2007. With George Bush still in office, and a lot of the heat of, you know, the war on terror going on, and when our current president, Barack Obama, got put into office, the time was actually changed to 7 minutes till midnight.
Yeah.
We were moving farther away from it in hopes that, you know, things were going to get better.
Hold on, the act of actually putting him in office alone.
It corresponded with that time.
I see. Oh, okay. Yeah. I gotcha.
So one can really assume it would be, you know, in the hope that this would be a more peaceful administration. And it seems that 4 years later, we're right back where we started.
Here I am, right back where I started again. Well, I guess we're going to have to give the final word to the Kirk bot. So, Captain Kirk, tell us, in your honest opinion, is the world going to end?
Yes, someday.
Well, perhaps.
Well, thanks for that, Kirk. Are we going to eat? Eventually.
Eventually. Well, you know, we'll give him the final word. That goes out to from our artificial oracle here in the studio. On behalf of Holly, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, producer Chris Hayes, engineer Matt Oakley, and, of course, yours truly, the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, we are The Graylian Report, broadcasting every Tuesday from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. To all you out there in Gradioland, in the meantime, stay strange. We'll talk to you again next week.